One, two, three, four!
Turn your lights down, way down low. But turn up that radio. It's Steve and Johnny. Johnny and Steve. Every night there's something new. You never know just
So my first question
is,
and I have many, but my first one is, where is everybody going tonight?
I know.
It was like running a gambit to get into the station tonight.
But we made it.
You know where to go when you need a friend. Just tune that radio to WGN.
That's right.
And how many people did we count that didn't have their headlights on tonight?
Too many. Entirely too many.
But where's everybody? This was really, it was like a morning rush hour.
Absolutely.
Coming into the station tonight.
In fact, I took a couple of pictures of traffic on Lakeshore Drive.
And let me bring in our producer, Julian. Julian, you said you had the same thing as you were driving in?
Oh, yeah. More traffic than as usual at about 7:30.
Now, a listener just texted, indeed, we know that Pink is in concert at Soldier Field, but at 7:30, I would think that you'd already be in Soldier Field, in your seat, with your beverage, waiting for the concert, if it hasn't already started. Yeah, that's one of the many things happening in town this weekend. We've got the triathlon. We were talking off the air about the triathlon. Apparently, it's like one of the largest triathlons in the world. Hello?
And I guess most of the publicity always goes to the marathon in fall.
Right, in October.
Yeah.
And this triathlon, not only is it the 41st, but it is attracting some pretty impressive runners. I guess there are like a half a dozen Parisian runners that will be here on Sunday. And Bob Fukuda, keeper of the big plug, is in studio with us. We're talking about Bob Kessler from the newsroom. He's going to be swimming.
Unfortunately, not in the Chicago River, but well, he will be swimming.
Maybe that's a good thing, though.
Actually, I thought it was a good thing. He was so convinced he was just going to, they're just going to dive into that river. I was like, no, thank you.
So they've decided they'll put them in a boat. The swimmers will be in a boat, and they'll be taken out to Lake Michigan.
Yep.
That doesn't sound like fun to me. I'm kind of,
But I'm in awe of anybody who does one of these triathlons, because we've talked before. We're most familiar with the Florida Ironman triathlon.
Yes. And you don't want to go to a restaurant a couple of nights before the Ironman's in town, because if there are carbs in that restaurant, they are being eaten because you're getting ready for the triathlon.
Carbo loading, that's a big deal.
Yeah. My idea of some kind of event like that would
By the way, that voice of God, that's Ron Brown in the newsroom.
That was me.
In case you were wondering.
I dropped my voice there for a moment.
And nice trick, yeah.
Yes. I'm looking for like a scoot-a-thon, something like that.
I've always wanted to do the triathlon.
Really?
Too. I've done the marathon. I've been down to the triathlon and talked to some people who were in it. And they said, you've done marathons. Then this is, marathons are harder than the triathlons. And
what?
That's what I said. I was surprised.
How did we miss the you've done marathons?
Oh, I don't know. I guess it never came up. But, yeah, I've done five, several Chicago marathons. So I enjoyed it.
And how long and how far?
Well, the marathon is, what, 26 miles.
Yeah.
So, I didn't win any of them. I wasn't competitive, but my whole goal was to finish, and
sure.
And I did. I finished them all. First one injured, but I still finished it.
Oh, wait. You have the distinction of being the first one injured, and that was, what, a foot, a knee, a hip, what?
That was a knee. I bought the wrong kinds of shoes to run in. You're either pronate or supinate, and I thought that I knew what I was doing, and I bought the wrong kinds of shoes, and after running 20 miles in a practice run, I found out I didn't. I did the wrong one, but still made it through. I went through about 8 or 9 miles before my knee was just like shot.
Ouch.
So I did a lot of fast walking since then, and I was okay.
Well, that's it. That's very impressive. I mean, I'm in awe of you if you did one, much less five.
Well, the triathlon was a goal of mine, and I just never got around to it. And the most challenging thing about the triathlon is the swimming. It's the first thing you do, and I think it's a 2-mile swim. And it's choppy water on the lake, and it's very difficult to swim in that choppy water and keep your breath going and your face out of the water. And you have to use most of the triathlon participants will use a wetsuit, so you have to have a wetsuit because that lake is still very, very cold to be in there for that long a time.
Yeah. Well, we see that at the Ironman event in Florida. They start out swimming in the Gulf. And it's very early in the morning. It's like 6 or 7 in the morning. Yeah. And then I'm thinking, that's the hard part? You're going to get that over with first, and then you're going to run, and then you're going to ride your bike?
Yeah. But explain to me something that my pea-sized brain is not understanding. The Chicago Triathlon is going over a couple days.
Right.
When we're in Florida, the Ironman Triathlon, and it's running and swimming and biking, it's 1 day, usually starts about 6 in the morning and wraps up about somewhere between 5 and 7 at night.
Two different events. The event that they had today was like a sport event. It's shorter, so it's a whole different classification. So it will only be 1 day. It'll be tomorrow, the triathlon.
And today also included some events for kids.
Children's, right.
Okay.
So they want to make it into a weekend thing. So.
Yeah. It was very confusing, though, because
there's nothing been going on in Chicago lately.
Right. I looked up the triathlon to see how it would affect our traffic tonight. And if you look at the city's press release for this weekend, it indicates that Lakeshore Drive is closed southbound, completely closed southbound from Hollywood all the way to Randolph. Until noon tomorrow. That's not true. We just drove that. It is not true. In fact, I put it into our GPS and I said, well, if it's open, we'll take it. Otherwise, we have to go over to the Kennedy Expressway. It was open. It was busy, but it was open. So there you have it. Well, we have a lot of things we're going to talk about tonight. There are so many things happening in the city, and yet we had this little week that was quite impressive here in Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Weather could not have been more perfect for the DNC. And if you were listening to the Mincing Rascals, you heard them recapping the reaction from the police department as well as from protesters. And I think overall, in retrospect, we can say a lot of people were surprised that we came through this. This was not
anywhere close to 1968.
Oh, Lord, no.
Thank goodness.
No.
That was. I don't think that anybody really believed that. It was just a dramatic, sensational way to frame it, basically. Remember 1968. Well,
there was actually a group that called themselves the Remember 1968 group, and that was their goal, was to make it as
chaotic.
Yes, 1968. Yeah. And to me, that's one of my childhood memories. I mean, it is so strong in my head because I grew up in Lincoln Park, and a lot of the overflow from Lincoln Park ended up right on our side street, right in our front yard, and people were camping out and right on our property.
Literally, the whole world was watching.
Absolutely.
It really was.
At that point, I was at my second job in radio, WLTH in Gary, and I remember watching the coverage with my dad. And we just couldn't believe this is happening in our city.
We had a church at the end of our block. A small church had a fenced-in front yard, and it was very controversial because they brought in a bunch of pigs, little baby pigs, and put them in the front yard. And then you know what they did. They put up the sign and basically said, here's your Chicago's finest. And that was very controversial in the neighborhood. Why is the church doing this?
Okay. Well, we will talk about some of the things that happened this past week.
Yes.
Well, by the way, we should mention in a few minutes we're going to be talking with Mike Jensen from Channel 9 about the heat wave that apparently is after a wonderful week for the DNC in Chicago. Yes. Apparently, we're going to have to buckle up. We're getting triple-digit temperatures, so Mike's going to join us in a little while.
And how weird, but how lucky that, for example, the triathlon is not going on with triple-digit temperatures, and all these people from all around the country, in fact, around the world, are not here during triple-digit temperatures. So he's going to give us a lowdown on that. It's going to be kind of hot on Sunday, but really hot Monday and Tuesday. But he'll have the details on that.
So we're talking a little bit about what was going on next week. Next week? Sure. By the way, next week, we ain't going to be here.
Right.
We mentioned our grandson, Joseph. We're going to be spending a few days with Joseph out in Pasadena. So there will be a replay of best of or whatever.
I was going to say, you hesitate to say best of because they're going, all right.
Do we have any of those? I don't know.
What do we do to make those best ofs?
Anyhow, next week you will hear words that we've said before.
Yes.
But we were talking about what was going on in Chicago last week. And one of the things that I loved, Stephen Colbert, live every night after the DNC, and it kind of messed up CBS programming because you didn't know when it was going to start because it was in fact live. And
The auditorium theater was unbelievable.
The acoustics,
yes,
just wonderful. And I'm not just saying it because he was in Chicago. It seemed to me like his adrenaline was really up.
Midnight.
I mean, he loves this city.
Yeah. It was absolutely a love letter to the city. I mean, it was just as good as you could hope for.
I mean, all of the bits, the live stuff, and the pre-recorded, like when he went to Wrigley Field.
Oh, my gosh. Ron Brown over in the newsroom, as our resident diehard Cub fan, did you see the bit when Colbert went to Wrigley Field? It was so funny.
And when he was in Wrigley Field and he went up into the area.
The scoreboard.
The scoreboard where the guy who is there has been working there since.
I think he said 1969.
It's a dream, I think, of every Cub fan to be able to do that. So I never got a chance to do it. But
it must be brutally hot up there. Just think Monday and Tuesday what it's going to be like in that.
Well, speaking of brutally hot. Yeah. Colbert was half kidding the guy who changes the scores and said, you know, do you ever want to strip down to your skivvies? And the guy kind of laughed, and I forget what he said, but Colbert stripped down to his skivvies.
Yes, he dropped trowel right there. Yeah, he goes, it's really hot up here already.
It might be too much information, but you know there are no bathrooms up there.
Oh, I did not know that.
They do what, you know, the old days in the country, what they did. There's a bucket up there that you have to use.
And how do you happen to know this?
I know somebody who actually has been up there who got a tour of the scoreboard.
And a tour of?
That was inside the scoreboard. So that was one of the things that they took away. It's like, you'll never believe what they do. What do you think they do when they have to use the bathroom?
They have
like
a chamber pot.
That's
right?
That's it. Exactly. So
it looks like a spittoon, but it's actually a chamber pot.
Apparently Colbert did not go there.
No, he did not.
He didn't.
No.
Because maybe he didn't need to go there.
Oh.
There we go. Thank you.
But also, one of the best musical performances you will ever see, Mavis Staples and Jeff Tweedy. Were they
Ron, if you haven't seen that, look it up. It's on YouTube. Oh, my gosh.
It's the song that Mavis first recorded like 60 years ago.
In 1964. Yes.
Not I'll Take You There.
Freedom Train.
The Freedom Train, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, is it good?
She is so wonderful. And I melted one time. I interviewed her, and she told me I had a cute dimple. I could not speak. I couldn't speak. I was like, what am I going to say now? What do I say now?
Oh, that's cute. Oh,
and she was just laughing because she knew. And I, every time someone brings up Mavis Staples, I bring up that story.
Because, of course. That's okay. Yes.
But
yes.
It's true, and I have to. It's like, that's my opportunity. So,
well, she says in her own autobiography that Bob Dylan had proposed to her. And I just find that such a fascinating combination, yeah. Bob Dylan. But then again, she and Jeff Tweedy on stage were magical.
Oh, it was. In fact, we got to see if we can find some of the audio to that, because it was, as Johnny said, magical.
And I had to look up 1964, what was the story behind her doing that song in 64. And on a personal level, it was in 64 when she had been married for 1 year that her husband told her he did not want her to continue doing music. He wanted her to stay home. And she rode the freedom train and said, sorry, I'm out of
your nose.
After a year, never married again, never had kids, and went on with this fabulous...
And said no to Bob Dylan, too.
That's right, and went on with a fabulous career.
And the Staples, they have a family plot here in Chicago.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we had a wonderful Saturday night we spent with Pop Staples on the air. And at that time, he had just been contacted by David Byrne, and he was asking us what we knew about David Byrne, because he didn't really know very much about him. And David Byrne wanted to perform with him, and he's like, he's on the radio with us talking about, I don't know about this David Byrne man, you know.
And I will never forget the first time I saw Pop Staples and the Staple Singers back in the 70s when I was at the Once Big 89, and there was some big promotion for something, and the Staple Singers were playing, and whoa, and Pop Staples, possibly the coolest man in the universe.
Well, Mavis, pretty cool at 85 years old.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. So you kids, if you haven't seen that from the Colbert Show, because it was very late at night by the time they got to the musical act.
I have to say, I got scared, because we have monitors, and we have Channel 9 on.
Yes.
And I'm watching Mike Jensen's forecast. And Mike, did I see correctly that the heat index could get to 115?
Yes, you did see that. I think Monday through Tuesday, Tuesday being the worst of it, if we don't have any thunderstorms show up with all the humidity that's going to be out there, temperatures rising into the upper 90s, we could feel like it's 110 plus.
Yikes.
And at that point in time, the National Weather Service has already put out for Cook County an excessive heat watch that would go into effect at noon on Monday. But we will be adding counties and other locations to, you know, watches and advisories and possibly excessive heat warnings as we go through the next 24 to 48 hours. So it's just, you're seeing the heat is, it's becoming a little more obvious this is going to happen. You know, we're really going to take off temperature-wise. And it's not surprising. A year ago, it was 100 degrees.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we went through very hot spell this time last year. But I tell you what, there are a lot of indications that this could be it in terms of really hot, nasty conditions. The Climate Prediction Center always put some things out, and you can kind of look at, I can look at long-range forecast models as well. But the 6 to 10-day outlook has us leaning toward it being a little bit warmer than average. But the 8 to 14-day outlook, which would be September 1st through the 7th, actually leans towards us being cooler than average. And not just, we're kind of leaning that way, but a real, hey, we think that potential is there. Which is what we did last year, too, after we had this big push of hot air into the area. And then, things cooled off. One of the things that is hard to compare, you can look at the air masses last year when we got real hot, got up to 100 degrees, and look at different things where they're setting up with just the air masses. But you also factor in what is going on with agriculture, with the crops, and those outlying years especially. The corn, it gives off humidity. And so, depending on what the crops are doing right now, that can certainly make a difference. Anybody that's especially lived out in a rural area, you get, you know, get around a cornfield, or if you were to walk out into a cornfield on a hot summer day, it is just stifling. One, there's no breeze out there, but the amount of moisture that is in that crop, I mean, you could actually say that, you know, corn is almost like a tropical crop. I mean, it's got that much moisture in it. So, we are in for some hot and nasty conditions, and it's that time to remind ourselves, okay, you know, you work outside. If you're going to be outdoors, you got anything you want to get done, you know, give yourself plenty of time to go do it. Mm-hmm. The record highs for both Monday and Tuesday is 97 degrees here in Chicago, set in 1973. At this point, I've got 96 on the board for Monday and 97 for a forecasted high on Tuesday. It really, you know, when you're splitting hairs sometimes on whether you go one way or the other. But once you start getting that heat index way up there, you know, well into the triple digits, nobody's comfortable. And actually, you know, dew points have made their way into the 70s for a lot of us. When we get into the 70s, that's that air that you wear. You walk outside and go, oh, hey, I'm no longer in Chicago. I feel like I'm walking along the Gulf Coast, and that's where we find ourselves. Yeah.
I will share that I was this old when I found out that corn gives off humidity.
I know.
Evapotranspiration.
Okay.
I just throw out big words. And, you know, the thing is, I could just make things up right now. So you're admitting that you maybe didn't.
But you come from a corn family, as we learned earlier this summer. And so I have to ask you, the Jensen corn done for the year?
I think they are. I think last I checked, they were... you know, packaging some up, they would even ship, I think, I can't remember how many dozens it was. I think there was at least three dozen in a big bag that they would ship to you. They were actually sending it to folks that lived out of state. So it was giving an opportunity for people to order it. I know that I got some and made sure that it was cut into much smaller pieces, and they were vacuum sealed and put in the freezer. And later this winter, I could have a seafood boil or something, throw some corn in there, just have some corn on the cob if I wanted to. It's always good.
Let's not talk food this early in the show. Really. Before we let you go, number one, last week was, I guess, a gift. I mean, weather-wise, it was absolutely amazing.
It was Board of Tourism weather.
Yeah. But typically, the average temperature is like 80 for this last week
82.
Of August.
82 right now. Okay. Yeah, lower 80s. So we are going to be way above that. And it looks like we'll be even warmer than average Friday into Saturday, which right now I've got pegged at around 84 degrees for afternoon high. So just take care of yourselves. You know, keep cool. And, of course, the CPS kids are back on Monday. So hopefully the air conditioners are running.
Yeah, well, they claim that they've got backup AC. Yeah. So if one goes out, but then you got to wait for somebody to put it on a cart, bring it up, put it in the room. So we'll just hope that they all work. Well, thank you, Mike. We appreciate your help tonight.
All right. Have a good one.
You too.
All right. Bye now.
Mike Jensen over at
115.
Yeah, WGN
News. Now, that's the heat index, but still. 115.
A quick question. Bob, when you were in school, did you have AC in school? No.
Nope.
Because when we saw...
We sure didn't.
Some spokesperson from CPS was on the news last night, and he said, we've got all these backup air conditioners. Yeah. We know they all work, but if you need one, we're going to be able to roll it in, put it in the window. You're going to be fine.
One of the hottest summers of my life was the summer that I went to summer school.
Oh, you poor kid.
No. Yes. Never
Julian,
again.
You had AC, right?
Oh, yes, I do.
Yeah, you did. And that was just the norm, right?
Yeah. There was one year I had a car, an 04 Accord. AC was busted, did not have the budget to fix it, so I had to suffer with the windows down.
So you went to school to stay cool.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah, we didn't have air conditioning at Senn High School, and we drive by there occasionally. I got to look and see, do they have window
I think they do.
Hanging out? Because those windows are those big windows on chains. Remember those?
Speaking of that kind of thing, the route we take, we drive back past a building that has been around for a long time, and they obviously don't have central air because they have the individual units hanging out of each of the... Well, and that just looks hot to me,
even with
the units hanging out outside of the windows.
We can go by our old apartment on Pratt Boulevard, and there is the AC that we bought still in the window.
Along with the custom-made blinds that we bought, that the people who were moving in said, oh yeah, we'll send you a check for those. How many years have we been gone?
Well, actually, we lived there for a couple of years, so it was like 37 years ago. But it's so funny to drive by. I go, that's our air conditioner, and those are our blinds hanging there. Well, good. They made things better than they do these days. They stuck around for a long time.
Thank Willis. Willis Carrier, the inventor.
Yes. Very good. I knew that, but I was like, yeah, I think you... as in Carrier air conditioners? Yeah. Yes.
In fact, there was an interesting website that we found about him just a couple months ago, and I don't remember why we went there, but we did, and he's got a fascinating history.
I know. What did we do before Google? You know. Okay, coming up tonight, a guy that we had on a couple of months ago and got a wonderful response. He is going to join us again tonight. Mm-hmm. He's a young man who knows a scary amount of history.
He's a music archivist.
He is. And we're talking about the American Songbook, and he's bringing in some oddities, things that you have probably never, ever heard before.
We talked about this the last time we had Don Romano on with us, mm-hmm. because he played something near the end of our conversation. We said we should do a show sometime where you bring in funny songs. Tonight is that night.
Yes, 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 yes. And it's also car night, so Tom Appel will join us later on tonight.
And as we mentioned the last time we had Tom on, and a lot of people have been interested in hearing this, we're going to talk about the car buying process.
Yes.
And let you know about this new thing that is going on, phantom braking.
Yeah, just what
that's
I mean.
A real thing, yeah. Sadly.
Phantom braking and recalls.
Yeah.
Sadly, as you said, we seem to have a whole bunch of those every time Tom joins us. So we got a lot to cover with him. We are going to spend a little bit of time tonight and talk about going back to school. And I want to spend some time talking about dress codes in school. I'll just quickly lay this out there. We're all familiar with Crocs, right? Did you know that this year the big thing in dress codes is no Crocs? Because don't you know, Crocs say gang member. When I think Crocs, I think gang member, right? But there's got to be a reason for it. So before we get to that subject, if you are in education and you know, maybe you can enlighten me at 312-981-7200. But right now, we'll take a break and come right back on WGN.
Well, you know you make me want to shout, kick my heels up.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Time for some shouts.
I just looked at a text from 708 area code checking in from the southeast corner of Cook County, working towards setting up a portable air conditioner. Well, you go. Get ready for it. We were also talking off the air about school. We have to spend some time tonight talking about going back to school. Boys swimming naked, girls being humiliated, how hot it was in the school, unless you went to the principal's office. We were out to lunch the other day with our dear friends Gary and Sue, and we started talking about their experience in Indiana and in Wisconsin, which was quite a bit different than ours in the Chicago public schools. But while at lunch, a woman walked by our table and turned on her heel and said, "Are you Stephen Johnny?" And I said, "Yes." And Mary Joyce was so sweet. She'd listened to us for years.
Mary Joyce, who, of course, went to a Catholic school.
Yes.
And sadly, after Mary Joyce left, you found the picture of you with one of Mary Joyce's best friends, who was one of your best friends.
Yes, in grade school, her very best friend was my high school best friend. Crazy small world. So Mary Joyce, you better be listening tonight, because she was not aware that we were back on Saturday nights. And we said, we'll talk about you. So you better be listening.
So that was us talking about her.
That's right. Some of the other folks that are tuned in tonight, and we appreciate your text throughout the show at 312-981-7200. We've got Gordon, who listens from Flowery Branch, Georgia. one of the hardest towns for me to say, but it just sounds so picturesque. Also listening tonight is Celine from Chicago, or as she calls herself, Chicago Celine. Sherry's in Morris, and Ken is in Ann Arbor. Scott is in Pierre, South Dakota tonight. Butternut Bonnie is listening in from Wisconsin. Bill in Hobart, Indiana.
Doesn't that sound like someone that
I know
back in the days of the barn dance that... And now here's Butternut Bonnie.
She's going, Steve, why do you have to pick on me every week?
Because you're so pickable.
Butternut Bonnie. Bill is in Hobart, and Robin is in Dyer, and Sherry Hanrahan's in Romeoville. Don is in Portage, Michigan. Dean in Indy. George Clemens is tuned in from Augusta, Georgia. I mentioned Hobart. Well, of course, our buddy Chuck Snitchler, mm-hmm. who, as I always like to say, is the best friend of this radio station and everyone on this radio station. Nancy Hollins is in Northbrook. Sharon Malone in K-Town. Mary Gold in Tinley Park. Norb Rosansky, hey Aurora, out in the Fox Valley. And Catherine Lissick is in Naperville. Linda Moeller is a big fan of Don Romano. She's looking forward to Don. She's in the hot Oklahoma panhandle. I think we had 12 states tuned in tonight. Yep. Brian Haig is tuned in. Actually, he may have to go to bed early. He gave us the complete rundown, but he'll be listening to the podcast. So that one's for you, Brian. Becky Offsayoff is tuned in. Ellen Maria from McHenry County. Rita Reagy in Fort Worth, Texas. Kathy Lennon and Susan Schimmel and Glenn Ellen and Susan Powell in Memphis. Beverly Goodall in Highwood. Judy B. in Oak Lawn. Scott Cooper's in Naperville. Eric Baum, Wells Harbor, Michigan. No, Wells Beach, Maine. Excuse me, he always sends a lovely picture from along the coast there. Also, Sharon Holman and Richard Patchkey. He's in Apple Valley, Minnesota. Margo Moore, Albuquerque, New Mexico. Jan Richardson and Tom Appel is tuned in. Thank you, Tom. Christine Failing is in Plainfield. Sandy McComas is in Michigan City, Indiana. Randy Ryer is in Palestine, or do you say Palatine? That is Indiana. Diane Vasquez, who is our graphics guru, and thank you, Diane, for tonight's graphic. Lester Clyden is our trucking buddy. Brian Lefevre is in Bridgeport. Thank goodness Chicago's listening. Peter Bajukabowicz is in Citrus County, Florida. Patrice Chintari is back home and listening to us on the radio. Gene Jacobson is in Milwaukee. Frankie Bartolotta. Hey, Frankie. He's an old friend that I don't know that he's ever checked in on a Saturday night.
I think last time we saw Frankie was at a book signing we did at the record store.
I can see him. Yeah, I know.
With Custer.
The Jazz Music Mart dude.
Yes.
Yes. All we can say is yes.
Yes.
Rich Wade is in Troy, Michigan. Robin Aiken in Port Charlotte, Florida. Mildred Bartlett is in Oregon, Illinois. Nancy Taffy is in West Allis. Helen Thomas is in Kenosha. Dan Russell is in Menominee Falls. Paul Halverson, Bonnie Nelson, and Jeffrey Welshens is in Elkins, West Virginia. Sherry's in Morris and Ken is in Ann Arbor. And if I missed you this week, I'll catch you in 2 weeks, since we won't be here next week.
And if you want to see some of the pictures that Johnny took as we were driving into the radio station tonight, go to facebook.com/Steve and Johnny Show, and you will see some of the pictures from when we were driving in tonight. And if you scroll down a little bit, you will see some pictures of a wonderful August evening walk through our garden. And Johnny has such a wonderful green thumb. And
it looks a little shaggy, but hey, it's August, right?
So just scroll down and you will see a bunch of interesting pictures.
That's right. You'll see my zinnias. I'm in love with zinnias. Oh, my gosh. And I now follow a zinnia group. You asked me the other night, what am I doing? I said, I'm in my zinnia group. We're exchanging notes on seeding our zinnias.
Wasn't zinnia the warrior princess?
Yeah, that's right. Quick shout out. This text just in. I want to give a shout out to our 32-year-old daughter, Cassie, who's a stage 3 cancer survivor, and NICU nurse at Rush Hospital and expecting a baby, her first child. So thank you, 630, for checking in. Yeah. And thank you, Cassie, for everything you do, and good luck to you.
815, listening from our drive to Rockford. That's Dave Brandon.
There's a new casino going in Rockford, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think I heard an ad for that just the other day. So what are you doing, Dave? Headed to Rockford? Just going home? We're getting some texts from folks that are reminiscing about going back to school. And yes, it was a different experience for you Catholic kids than it was for us public school kids.
Yeah, one of the many reasons you rarely see me in navy blue is because at both Our Lady of Peace and St. Bride's, we had to wear these navy blue shirts with dark navy blue ties.
Didn't you wear a light blue shirt? A navy blue shirt would be kind of odd. I think you were
maybe light. Maybe the tie was dark navy blue.
Well, you just hate navy blue.
Yeah, I do, in general. And corduroy pants. You'd be walking. Didn't matter what time of year it was, but especially in the middle of winter.
Yeah. Well, especially if you had chubby legs. Then you got the whistle going on, you know. Of course, if it was the first day of school, and for us back in the day, it was always right the day after Labor Day, I wore wool because it was back to school. Mm-hmm. I wore corduroy, which was stupid. Again, no air conditioning, but I was wearing my back to school wardrobe. You better believe it.
As I've said before, proof that opposites do attract. Johnny loved going to school. I hated going to school.
That's
okay. And nothing has changed.
It hasn't held you back. Look at that.
We would like to thank Navy Pier and the people who do the fireworks. They moved the fireworks back to a place where we can see them tonight.
Right over your shoulder. So they continue. And I guess next week would be the last weekend, the last Saturday night, because they do Labor Day from Memorial Day to Labor
Day.
You're
right.
And then there will be a Christmas week where we'll have fireworks. Oh, it's really impressive tonight through New Year's
Eve.
And
you just took a picture that you're going to put up on our Facebook page?
I will. It's really, really impressive tonight. So if you haven't seen the fireworks all summer, you have to be down here for Labor Day weekend next week.
And we have our own form of fireworks in the studio with us with a returning guest. We had so much reaction the last time we had Don Romano on with us, which was we were talking about Fourth of July unusual music,
right.
And Don is becoming our resident music archivist, and he's nice enough to come on down and hang out in the studio with us. And Don, for people new to our conversations, first of all, they should go and look up Don's American Songbook on Facebook, and a little bit of your background about why you developed this fascination with becoming a music archaeologist.
Well, it's just something that I've always enjoyed. And again, thanks for having me on again. This is wonderful to be back. I have enjoyed old music since I was very young. And
let me stop you right there.
Yes.
For the benefit of people who did not hear you the last time you were on, you're not 93.
I'm not 93.
You just happen to like music that was way before your time.
Yes, yes.
And it speaks to you and it became a passion for you.
Absolutely, yes. And I've collected it. As I grew up and, of course, got more resources to be able to find all these hard-to-find recordings, it became sort of an obsession to track down just unusual and obscure recordings that are hard to find. And the older they are, the more interesting they are. So,
now, did all of this happen prior to your getting immersed in the Internet, or was the Internet the thing that allowed you to start really doing serious collecting?
The Internet was emerging, I think, at the time that I started getting interested in it when I was a kid. So I still remember, I still have a lot of the books that I would read about it. And then once the Internet came around, then it became very easy to track all this stuff down. And people would share what they had. And
eBay,
right?
Of course.
Yes, that certainly helps. And a lot of packages have come over, come to my household throughout my life. But that's how I've been able to amass the collection I have. And going to record stores sometimes I'm just given things because people know that I have an interest in it. So, I love to have that stuff and preserve it. And I think that's the main thing is digitizing the old stuff that I have, because you just never know how long it's going to be good for.
In fact, when Don was with us the last time, we had a couple people that said, do you think he would like my collection? So you're going to be the guy that we're going to say, not Steve. Steve's got enough. We're going to call Don and say, Don, do you want this person's collection? And a lot of times people just, they inherit it and they don't have any need or interest in it, and they just don't want it to go to the garbage.
But I want to throw out a little bit of a plea, because Don mentioned trying to digitize some things. And I saw on Facebook that you recently were given a bunch of cartridges.
Yes, radio cart.
So this is for people, you're familiar with your 8-track cartridges.
That's what they look like.
But that's what they look like, but it's a different type of cart. So if we have anybody listening who worked at a radio station and would have access to some cart machines so that you could then play it, and then do you have the equipment that would allow you to connect a cart machine up and then digitize it?
I probably could, yeah. I've got enough of, I think, the equipment to do it. I just don't have the machine to. It does not. It looks like an 8-track, but it does not fit in your 8-track player.
No.
Did you buy it just because you saw the labels and said, wow, this is a treasure trove?
Yeah, I think it was from WNYC. It was one of the big stations in New York, I forget, but they're all short bumps with like interviews that would play prior to a song, and some of them I've never heard before. There are interviews with Irving Berlin and Alan J. Lerner, and I'd love to hear what's on them, but I have no means of playing them back. It's the one technology I don't have, and I call a lot of digitizing places, and they say, you know, that's the one format we don't work with,
right?
And with those things, time is of the essence, because it's magnetic tape, you know, and it's, you don't want to lose that. So, anybody that...
Did you just buy a big box? Did they have it available?
Yeah, there's about 40 cartridges.
Wow.
And I just jumped on, even though I don't have the playback. I thought, well, one day I'll be on the radio and broadcast to the entire Chicagoland area to see if anybody knows.
Because we don't have a cart machine in here. We always did in all of our radio stations. Yeah. There is one here at the radio station.
Right.
Maybe we can work out a way where Don could just hide in a corner and listen in one of the machines here. Because they're just not that common.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So, what have you purchased recently that you went, wow, this is just the coolest?
Oh, gosh, I'm trying to think.
Because you buy sheet music, you buy, as you said, vinyl, interviews, all of that good stuff.
Yes. What did I get recently? One of the recordings I brought today was a kind of an odd recording called, Irving Berlin, some composer singing a song called Oh, How That German Could Love, which is just a ridiculous song. It's very silly, but it's from 1910. It's 114 years old, I've had a couple copies of the record on 78 for I've had them for a long time, but I've never been able to track down the sheet music. And finally, just a few weeks ago, I did track down the sheet music that I've been looking for a very, very long time. So now I not only have the record, but I have the sheet music to accompany it, and it's very hard to find because it's 1910.
I think that tonight happened as a result of you mentioning that song in passing as we were finishing up the show, and we went, wait a minute, you gotta come back.
You mentioned that, but we started talking about wacky songs, and you also mentioned one, You Haven't Lived Till You've Died in L.A.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and I was trying to be very deliberate with my choices to find just funny song titles, and boy, it's hard to narrow down. There's a lot of funny ones, but I tried to dig up some good ones, and...
We will jump into You Haven't Lived Till You've Died in L.A.
Yes. I'm going to bet that 99.9% of you have never heard this song before.
Through these portals, enter mortals, and the price is easy to pay. Oh, you haven't lived, no, you haven't lived until you've died in L.A. Love and friendship, happy endship in the jolly Hollywood way. Oh, you haven't lived, no, you haven't lived until you've died in L.A. Marble angels, unobtrusive, Roman fountains overhead, and surroundings so exclusive, it's a privilege to be dead. It's so roomy, love and bloomy, which is why I'm dying to say, oh, you haven't lived, no, you haven't lived until you've died in L.A. When you fade out, you'll be laid out 'neath a technicolor display. Oh, you haven't lived, no, you haven't lived until you've died in L.A. Each bereavement an achievement in the art of passing away. Oh, you haven't lived, no, you haven't lived until you've died in L.A. Quiet music, nothing sordid, Victor Herbert on request, or canaries pre-recorded for the pleasure of each guest. Every end is so stupendous that you feel like shouting hooray. Oh, you haven't lived, no, you haven't lived until you've died in L.A. It's so quiet, if you'll try it, you'll be more than carried away. Oh, you haven't lived, no, you haven't lived until you've died in L.A. Every statue gazing at you in the most solicitous way says you haven't lived, no, you haven't lived until you've died in L.A. No old-fashioned mausoleum that may crumble or decay, but a jolly coliseum that has room for all L.A. You can chuck it, kick the bucket on a rickshaw ride to Cathay, but you haven't lived, no, you haven't lived until you've died in L.A. It's a treat first, going feet first, underneath a glamorous spray. Oh, you haven't lived, no, you haven't lived until you've died in L.A. You were writhing like a driving, but you don't go out the same way. Oh, you haven't lived, no, you haven't lived until you've died in L.A. In the summer, if it's hot out, our good nature never halts. You can always rent your plot out, try our air-conditioned vaults. Choice locations for vacations, make your reservations today. Oh, you haven't lived, no, you haven't lived until you've died in L.A.
A long time ago, Spike Odell famously quoted, "You don't get this kind of radio up and down the dial."
Yeah, the looks on our faces are, well, he's done. No, there's, and the lyrics are hysterical. You can chuck it when you kick the bucket.
That's right.
Oh my gosh, and that was.
That was Sammy Fain, who is a composer. He wrote all the, you might know, Calamity Jane. He wrote all the music for that.
And, he won an Academy Award for Calamity Jane.
Yeah. I want to know, what was his inspiration? Why the heck did he write that song?
Well, it was for a musical, actually. It was a review called My L.A., and it was a topical review about life in Los Angeles, and that was his contribution with Paul Francis Webster was the one who wrote the lyrics, and who also wrote all the Calamity Jane
And what year
lyrics.
Was this song?
1950. And this is, so this particular song, this recording has a commercial release, but it was edited down to a minute and 20 seconds when they put it out on for a commercial release, or a minute, like 2 minutes, a 2 minute version. But I found this copy, which it's an acetate copy. So, and it says Gold Star Studios on it, which is the
right, legendary Gold Star Studios.
Phil Spector and the Beach Boys made all their songs.
Yeah.
And it's like 3.5. You've heard all of those choruses.
Yeah.
It's like a 3.5 minute version. And so
this is the album version.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. It's the extended cut. And it's great because, as far as I know, that's never, they had to edit it. And I heard that from Sammy Fain's son, who told me that they had to edit it down for time when they were releasing it on CD from personal recordings of his. So this got out in the wild and ended up in my hands. So I preserved it and brought it here. I don't think it's ever played before. So
it's probably never been played on this radio station, at least not the long
or any
version.
Other radio station.
Yeah, right. It's It's sort of morbid, but it's funny if you
listen to the lyrics. Are hysterical.
Air-conditioned volts. I like.
Yes.
That
wow.
What was the play successful?
It was a very small review. I don't know if it really took off in quite the way that their other shows did. I think it was a very specific performance just for or review for the Los Angeles area, I believe.
Because I can't see it playing in New York. Like, yeah, we're going to go pick on L.A.
Right.
Yeah. But he went on to be nominated for like 10 Academy Awards.
Sure.
And more.
Secret Love and Love is a Manly
Splendor Thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so he was a very prolific singer. A name not a lot of people know.
Right.
And that's him singing. And he did have a career as a singer early on called Sammy Fain, the Croonin' Composer. That was in the 30s. And I think late 20s. And then he became successful as a songwriter.
He was up there by the time he started getting nominated for Academy Awards.
Right. Yeah. Yes. He had already had a very big
career. I think Sinatra did some of his things too, didn't he?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. He did a bunch of Sammy Fain songs. Yeah. A lot of people
Those lyrics are just so silly.
Yeah.
And the title, You Haven't Lived Until You've Died in L.A. Sammy Fain.
Yes.
Wow. I don't think we asked you before. Do you play a musical instrument?
I do. I noodle around with a couple different instruments. Piano, guitar, drum. I play drums. I play trumpet in band. So.
Wow. Overachiever, maybe?
Maybe, but I'm a little rusty. I'm a.
Do you ever perform any of these songs?
No. Don't ask me to perform. No, it's not pretty. But I do enjoy playing. It's always been sort of easy for me to.
Can you read music? Like you said, you collect sheet music. Could you read?
Yeah, I could read sheet music. It takes me a little while. I'm not an expert. I do more by ear or tablature or something. But
that's like my favorite quote about reading music was from Chet Atkins. Somebody asked him if he read music, and he said, "Yeah, but not so much that it hurts my plan."
Yeah, right.
So.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so that was Sammy Fain. We've got some more gems coming up for you tonight. There was a picture of you, before we take a break, you do a really nice thing on your Facebook page where you remember people who maybe people of your generation don't even know them or they've seen them in old movies or something like that. When did that become like a passion of yours too, to recognize people who went before us, even if they're actors, not just musicians and writers and so when did that happen?
I guess that's always just been, you know, it mostly is when I come across something that's sort of like personal to somebody. Like I've come across, you know, like recently I posted a picture of a childhood photograph of an actress who was very famous in the 1930s. I think her name was Marjorie Woodworth. That was a couple days ago. And you know, I've had this for a long time, and it's a nice picture of her when she was younger. And you know, I think that, well, she wasn't terribly well known, and some of the people who I highlight aren't terribly well known, and it's just nice to sort of remember them and then bring them to.
What's the story that you had posted about the person who did not have a gravestone, a headstone?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot I did that. That was with Helen Forrest did not have
a singer, wonderful singer,
wonderful singer.
And that's sort of a kind of a sad story. She had a temporary marker at her stone in or at her grave site in California, and the 20th anniversary of her passing was coming up. She died in 99 July, oh gosh, July 3rd, I believe, somewhere around there in 1999. And her, you know, I saw the 20th anniversary of her passing coming up and in 2019, and I thought, wouldn't that be nice if she finally got the recognition that she deserved? Because I like band singers from the 40s, the 30s and 40s, and she was, you know, one of the tops. And just to think that she didn't have a stone, I thought was really kind of a crazy oversight. So I put together a GoFundMe at the time to see if we can raise some money to get a stone there. And I called over, and they were very nice and were accommodating. He said, yeah, that's a nice gesture to get her to have a stone. They said it's sort of unusual to have somebody not – to have a temporary marker for 20 years. So
yeah.
So we got our fundraising goal a couple years ago and got the stone laid, I believe, like the day before the 20th anniversary. So it was a really nice tribute.
That's cool.
And a lot of people, you know, helped. I mean, helped put up the money to put the stone. Mm-hmm.
It's not inexpensive. I mean, you were raising a couple thousand dollars,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we met our goal. And
and you got to go there when the stone...
Well, I still haven't visited yet. No, I haven't visited yet.
Oh, wow.
I just did it all, you know, remotely from here, and I coordinated with them by the phone. And
no family members? No one to step
forward? No, unfortunately, she had a son who... passed away a few years ago, I believe, and the stone never was put there. So
we should tell our friend Haley Dykes about this.
The interesting thing is Haley is like Don's age,
right?
And
Haley Dykes is the daughter of an extraordinary guitar player, Doyle Dykes. Mm-hmm. And when we first met Haley, she sings and she loves Helen Forrest.
Oh.
In fact, she did
a couple
of Helen Forrest songs,
yeah.
And we should let her know about
this.
Yeah,
and she said, you know, kids my age don't, because when we first met her, she was just out of her teens, and she said, they don't know who she is, but listen to this music, and she just started singing, and it was really wonderful.
You should check out, if you're on Facebook, go to facebook.com/Don's American Songbook, and I'm so glad that he brought the next song. Because I've always been a fan of this woman, but what she does here is very different from what people know her as doing. And I'll kind of relate this to, I think it was mostly country musicians who would perform as themselves, but then they would have an alter ego, and they would do something kind of wacky with that alter ego. So, Don, you want to explain what this is we're about to hear from Joe Stafford?
Yeah, so this is Joe Stafford with her husband, Paul Weston, who in his own right was a very famous composer and arranger and conductor and pianist. And they had an alter ego that they adopted, the two of them, Jonathan and Darlene Edwards. And this recording that I brought is from their 1957 LP. It's called The Piano Artistry of Jonathan Edwards. And it was their debut album, their first one. And so it's, Paul Weston, and you're doing just very zany piano playing. I mean, it's very interesting piano playing. And then for Joe Stafford, in my opinion, was one of the best vocalists of the 40s, but has... it sings off key, very poorly.
This is going to hurt your ears at some point. Joe Stafford had a wonderful voice. I think she may have had perfect pitch. And if you've never tried to do it, people don't know how hard it is for a good singer to sing off key. Mm-hmm. And again, this may hurt your ears a little bit. You want to set up the song?
Yeah. So what I picked was a very popular song, Autumn in New York. And this is Joe Stafford singing as Darlene Edwards. The thing I love is that their album, Jonathan and Darlene Edwards in Paris, actually won a Grammy in 1961.
Yeah. Really?
For a comedy album.
Comedy album.
Yeah. But they would do this at parties to just kind of get a laugh out of people. And someone said, you should actually record the songs. And then they recorded, this was the first LP that they put out. And initially, they didn't say who they were. So people had to kind of guess, who's this terrible singer? And then they realize it's actually a very seasoned singer. And it does take a lot of skill to sing off pitch, so it's kind of funny. And the album cover is great because the guy has two, it shows a guy at the piano, but he has two right hands.
Oh!
It's great. That was kind of their gimmick. So this is a really funny one, Autumn in New York.
Okay, now we're not going to play all this because it will hurt your ears. But this is Autumn in New York. Yeah.
In New York, why does it seem so inviting? Autumn in New York, It spells the thrill of first nighting. Glittering crowds and shimmering clouds and canyons of steel. They're making me feel like I'm home. It's autumn in New York. That brings the promise of new love. Autumn in New York is often mingled with pain.
Okay, my ears are hurting. And they lure you in because it sounds like, oh, this is... And there are notes where it sounds like, okay, she's singing the...
Yes.
Oh, that would make dogs howl.
There probably are some doing that now. So was this their persona? Like they were kind of like something you'd see on Saturday Night Live,
yeah,
where they're supposed to be like lounge singers, yes, and they're just not very good.
Right.
So they're working the Holiday Inn circuit.
But then this was way before Saturday Night. This was what, 50s?
57, yeah. 57 yeah. was the debut.
Wow.
So imagine, just to put it in context, 57, Elvis, Jailhouse Rock, all of that going on. And here is...
Jonathan and Darlene
Edwards. And,
wasn't there a singer named Jonathan Edwards?
There was.
Sunshine?
Sunshine.
Yeah.
We had him on the show.
That's right.
Sunshine Go. Oh, hearing Darlene Edwards. Oh, I bet she'd do a wonderful
version
of
Sunshine.
That.
Yes. Wow. So, Darlene Edwards, again, Joe Stafford. Joe with just a J-O,
right.
Very, very popular.
And her husband, Paul Weston, who arranged for everybody, a mm-hmm. brilliant arranger.
Did she win Grammys other than her comedy?
I believe so, yeah. She was a pretty, I would hope. I
would too, yeah.
Because she was, for my money, was the best. She's classically trained, very, very good singer. That's why it's so funny, and you think who would put up the money to put out a record like it only has to be someone who's established enough to.
And as weird as it sounds, you have to be a really good singer to sing that bad.
Yeah. Okay, I just clicked on Jonathan and Darlene Edwards. This is really weird. Apparently in 1979, they did a version of the Bee Gees' Staying Alive.
I was going to bring that. That was going to be my
second
choice.
Oh, you're kidding.
That's pretty rough, too.
Apparently it ticked off the Bee Gees.
Julian, can you dig up Staying Alive by Jonathan and Darlene Edwards, and we'll play just a smidge of that?
Wow, it was just 40 years ago that the last album was Darlene Remembers Duke.
Yeah.
Like, as in John Wayne?
No, that's
no, Duke Ellington.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I was going to go, that's truly weird.
You got it, Julian? Okay, let's hear a little bit of Staying Alive.
Talk, music loud and fellas warm. I've been kicking around since I was born, and now it's all right, it's okay, and you may look the other way.
Okay, but I can't. No, that's it. No.
And we wonder why the Bee Gees were not happy.
I can't imagine why.
No. Wow. How funny.
I wonder how they got the rights to record that, because the Bee Gees would have had to give their permission for them to record that, unless they put it out and ask for permission later.
Afterwards, yeah. Wow.
Oh.
1982 was their last.
Oh.
Not that long ago, but they rode that whole comedy train for a couple of decades.
They did.
That's amazing.
It was popular.
And I just realized with the song we're about to hear, we may have heard it before. I could be wrong, but I think this was done, or a version of this was done, on The Big Bang Theory.
Oh,
I could be wrong.
I believe that's right. Yes,
Don, you want to set this up and tell us what this is?
Yeah. So what I brought in is a song by a man named Tom Lehrer, who's one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. When I think of the gods of comedic songwriting, I think of Tom Lehrer, who's still with us at 96. He's a mathematician and humorist, but on the side he would write these humorous songs in the 50s and put out a couple 10-inch records of his music, Tom Lehrer and more Tom Lehrer songs, I think are the LPs. The one that I brought today is The Elements, because frankly I looked through Tom Lehrer's catalog and I said I don't know how much of this can actually end up on the air.
Yeah,
but I think we're pretty safe with this selection. I picked The Elements song from Tom Lehrer. It's a very simple concept. Tom Lehrer just puts all of the periodic elements as of 1959 to music, to Gilbert and Sullivan's the Major General song from Pirates of Penzance. And yeah, he wrote it in 1959, and it was on the LP More of Tom Lehrer. So that's the setup for this one. For anybody who enjoys this song, I highly recommend exploring Tom Lehrer if you don't already know his music, because he's a very, very funny songwriter, and just had a great output that actually he's just very recently put into the public domain. But this one is very funny. It's good entry level Tom Lehrer for anybody who wants to get
okay,
to know
this
him.
Is
so here's Tom Lehrer and The Elements.
There's antimony, arsenic, aluminum, selenium, and hydrogen, and oxygen, and nitrogen, and rhenium, and nickel, neodymium, neptunium, germanium, and iron, americium, ruthenium, uranium, europium, zirconium, lutetium, vanadium, and lanthanum, and osmium, and astatine, and radium, and gold, and protactinium, and indium, and gallium, and iodine, and thorium, and thulium, and thallium. There's yttrium, ytterbium, actinium, rubidium, and boron, gadolinium, niobium, iridium, and strontium, and silicon, and silver, and samarium, and bismuth, bromine, lithium, beryllium, and barium. There's holmium and helium and hafnium and erbium and phosphorus and francium and fluorine and terbium and manganese and mercury, molybdenum, magnesium, dysprosium and scandium and cerium and cesium and lead, praseodymium and platinum, plutonium, palladium, promethium, potassium, polonium and tantalum, technetium, titanium, tellurium and cadmium and calcium and chromium and curium. There's sulfur, californium, and fermium, berkelium, and also mendelevium, einsteinium, nobelium, and argon, kryptonium, radon, xenon, zinc, and rhodium, and chlorine, carbon, cobalt, copper, tungsten, tin, and sodium. These are the only ones of which the news has come to Harvard. And there may be many others, but they haven't been discovered.
If you remember the Big Bang episode where Sheldon gets drunk and winds up dropping his trousers
and singing that song.
That's where that came from.
Which is pretty impressive, too.
It's a tough one to say. And actually, there's more elements. I think many more have been discovered since then. So they need another verse, I guess.
Or not.
Or not, maybe.
And so he's still alive at 96 years old.
Yes. Yes.
Have you ever had the chance to talk to him?
I've corresponded with him. Yes.
Have you?
Yeah. I think he lives in Cambridge, Massachusetts. That was a few years ago, but yeah, he very recently put all of his music in the public domain, put all of the sheet music out there for the song, so they're accessible to anybody.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and he has quite a catalog, a lot of really fun songs. And again, I would pick others, but they're sort of morbid topics. But he's a very good satirist.
Well, I found that Randy Newman said that he is one of the great American songwriters, without a doubt, right up there with everybody, the top guys, as a lyricist, as good as there's been in the last half of the 20th century. Dr. Demento played his music all the time and said he's the great American satirist. I mean, he's just really a smart guy, because the stuff that he writes and sings may sound simple, but it's not. So that's really, really interesting. Tom Lehrer.
In your adventures as a music archivist and just someone who appreciates the arts going back a long, long time, you've mentioned that you've talked with a lot of the people that we've talked about. Give us some pinch me moments. Who are some of the people that you, when you wound up having the conversation, you said, well, I'm really going to talk to who?
Well, there's a lot. I know the one who I was probably closest with at the time was a girl singer named Peggy King, who used to sing for the George Gobel show. I was very friendly with her, and she would come when I had a radio show when I was in college. I would phone her in and put the microphone up to the phone and put her on speaker, and we'd she'd talk about the songs on the air. No, nobody else in college was doing that, and I had this access to them. I know another one I did was another woman who I was friendly with was a woman named Monica Lewis, who was a singer in the 1940s. Actually, she was the voice of the Chiquita Banana in the 40s. And I had her on, and she was in her 90s, I think early, mid-90s. And I had her on, and it was great because, you know, we did our interview. I played some songs and, you know, kind of asked questions of her and about her time and her recordings and stuff. And she said, okay, I have to go now. I have ballet class.
In the 90s. And
I loved how she was, you know, in her early 90s and still going to ballet class. I just could not get over that. So that was, you know, it's so many of these, like, just interesting people you got to know. And unfortunately, she passed away a few years ago. But, boy, to be able to get them and have them on my show when I was in
especially a college radio show.
Right. Yeah, nobody else was doing that.
I don't think anybody in the whole country was doing that music in a college radio station.
Yeah, so that was really kind of thrilling to the five people listening to my show at the time.
Well, what day part did they let you do your show?
I would do it usually Saturday and Sunday mornings. Usually I was considered a specialty show because obviously listening to these kind of
songs. But they didn't bury you.
No.
They let you have a pretty good time slot. Yeah.
So I had a good...
And that was Elmhurst?
Yeah, Elmhurst.
So people in the community could also hear the radio station.
Right. And at the time, also through the internet, too. So people could listen, and people listen all over. So that was a lot of fun. But I'd say those were kind of two big names. I interviewed other people for my show. I interviewed Michael Feinstein for my show, who also is very big on the American Songbook.
A great picture of the two of you, too, because he realized, again, you're younger than him, and you're carrying the torch and trying to make people realize that this music was before us, but it's worth spending some time getting to know it.
Yeah, and we're all in it together, just trying to keep the music alive in these great recordings. So he was a lot of fun to interview. So there's been a lot of pinch me moments, you know, being able to just sit and be able to interview these people.
It's sure.
Just, incredible. So
do you hear from relatives of some of the people that you have been able to archive when they find out, oh, this guy's serious? And he's doing a respectful version of archiving my father, my grandfather's, whoever's work.
I'm trying to think now if I have. I've heard from certain people who have turned. I know once Martha Tilton's niece went to reach out to me because I had posted something about her. Martha Tilton was a singer with Benny. Actually, I think the first female pop singer to perform at Carnegie Hall, if I'm not mistaken, with Benny Goodman. Was that late 30s, I believe? Every once in a while, somebody who is a relative will come out and say, you know, will acknowledge either like a picture I post of their family member or, and sometimes, you know, I'm coming across kind of interesting, you know, material.
Sure.
So sometimes they've never seen or that I've never seen that picture or I've never heard that recording. So every once in a while, you know, that's... That's kind of the main thing, to get people in touch with.
While you're looking for a lot of older stuff, does AI make your job harder? Because more and more, we've seen just within the past several months, and we've talked about it, pictures that look like, oh, here's this historical picture of fill in the blank. And no, it's not. It's artificial intelligence making you think you got something and you don't.
Yeah, a lot of that's been popping up. Yeah, it's I guess you have to have try to be able to detect it and see if you can actually put those people together at that time period. You know, sometimes if there's people represented, you're like, oh, those people probably. or that face is a face that's extracted from a photograph that I've seen elsewhere.
I've seen it before, yeah. Like, and it's on another body.
Yeah,
and,
right.
Yeah.
So when you have what you think is this great find, you have to kind of vet it to make sure that it is a great find.
Yeah. And I don't know, you almost need the technology to counter what's put out there, AI. And it very well could be out there to see if there's similarities in a picture that might exist somewhere else. But yeah, that's a real thing. And now, and especially with voices too, the things that they're doing with AI and voices and with performances, you could, I heard one where somebody had taken American Pie and filtered Don McLean's voice with Paul McCartney's voice, and it sounded like Paul McCartney singing American Pie.
Oh, my.
I've never heard anything like that before.
If you've never heard...
What was the Johnny Cash?
The Barbie song. If you've never heard Johnny Cash singing the Barbie song, it's brilliant.
You have to hear it.
It's so well done. And you think, well, that's Johnny Cash. Well, no, the Barbie song wasn't around when Johnny Cash was around. And it's spooky. And a quick story. Our guest last week, Monica Ang, Axios reporter, she also wrote the book about the 30 great bites of Chicago food that you should have. And in that book, she writes about Malort.
Oh, sure.
So there's a guy that's written a book on Malort, the alcohol that I guess tastes like gasoline. Sure. And when she wrote her piece about this interview with him, AI stepped in and decided that they would interject religious references, as in my Lord.
Oh, interesting.
So she said, whoa, thank goodness I went back and reread it because he never said that. I never said that. So
we're up against the clock. Can you hang with us for a couple minutes?
I can.
Okay. We may come back with Johnny Cash, but then some other things.
Yes.
So stick around. More to come on WGN.
Hello, I'm not Johnny Cash. I'm a Barbie girl in a Barbie world. Life in plastic, it's fantastic. You can brush my hair, undress me everywhere. Oh, come on Barbie, let's go party, 'cause I'm in a Barbie world. If you wanna be my lover, you gotta get with my friends. Make it last forever, friendship never ends. Up in my hands, up to play my song, the butterflies fly away. Yeah, 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 it's a party in the USA.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio, and that was not Johnny Cash.
No, it was
not.
That was
Barbie girl.
AI-generated Johnny Cash done last year at this time when the number one movie was Barbie, which brought about a resurgence in the Barbie song, and it became popular all over again, and that's just spooky good. That is so Johnny Cash.
And we've been talking about wacky songs with Don Romano. You should check out his Facebook page, facebook.com/Don's American Songbook. And Don has been nice enough to bring in some truly strange music tonight.
Yes.
But you got to admit that the Johnny Cash thing is pretty impressive.
I would have loved to hear that at Folsom Prison.
I'm a Barbie really girl.
I'm sure that would have gone over very well.
Yeah. Wow. In fact, sometime we'll have to unearth the AI version of me rapping because... our computer guy, who joins us twice a month back in January, he says, now, I'm telling you, AI is going to be the topic this year. It's going to be like when we first started talking about the internet. And we went, oh, that's ridiculous. And he said, yeah, and you're going to be surprised when people can take a couple of words and make you do things that you... And the next week, there I was rapping.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, oh, no. And it sounds just like me.
Well, and they were just talking off the air about my gluten intolerance. And Patrick was able to put together this version of me selling... gluten and
like he took a Bitcoin commercial and turned it into a gluten coin. Oh. You know, I love gluten and I want to sell it. And I'm like, wow, that is really spooky.
And the point of all this is we were talking about with Don about having to be careful now in this world of AI. If someone says, oh, here's this rare thing, you really have to kind of vet that thing to make sure it is a rare thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway. You have another thing that you brought in by a Chicagoan, Bonnie Baker. You want to explain what this is?
Yeah, well, Bonnie Baker was a singer. She would perform at the Palmer House. She would perform there with Orrin Tucker, who her big song was "Oh Johnny, Oh Johnny." Mm-hmm. From the
was 19th. She Wee Bonnie Baker?
Yeah, she was Wee Bonnie Baker. Yes.
Oh, okay.
And together, and I think they were either engaged, because I have a radio broadcast of them announcing their engagement, so I believe they were married at one point. She was a prolific recorder in the late 30s and early 40s, and made a couple soundies and performed at like the Palmer House. So I pulled this one because "Oh Johnny's" a pretty humorous song, but I dug this one out from a record that I have from, oh gosh, I believe it was a compilation of a bunch of 78s that she had put out. So this one's from February of 1948. And she performs it with the George Albright Orchestra, and the song is called "I've Been Waiting for Your Phone Call for 18 years," and I tried to find songs with humorous titles and humorous content, and this one always struck me as sort of a funny one, and I think I should let it speak for itself.
Okay.
But it's a very funny song, Bonnie Baker and the George Albright Orchestra.
I've been waiting for your phone call for 18 years. Maybe you don't love me anymore. How long must I wait for you to keep our date? Could it be, sweetheart, that you are sore? I've been waiting for your phone call for 18 years. You told me that you'd call me back that day. I'm wasting my youth in a telephone booth. How could you treat me this way? I was young and healthy when you left me. Has your love grown cold? You're acting strange. Could it be you're fickle, or didn't you have the nickel? If you had written, I'd have sent the change. I've been waiting for your phone call for 18 years. Could it be you found somebody new? I'll wait for your phone call for 18 more, but after that we are through. Grown cold, you're acting strange. Could it be you're fickle, or didn't you have the nickel? If you had written, I'd have sent the change on a postcard. Been waiting for your phone call for 18 years. Could it be you found somebody new? I'll wait for your phone call for 18 more, but after that we are through. Waited 18 years and I'll wait 36, but after that we are through.
Wee Bonnie Baker.
What a sweet
voice. I've been
waiting
for your phone call for 18 years.
I like that. And I only knew because with the name Johnny all my life, I had somebody in my family singing "Oh Johnny, Oh Johnny," and I'd go, "No, don't sing that song. It's about a boy." And then I found out it was Wee Bonnie Baker. Yeah. What an interesting life. I had to look the woman up. Mm-hmm. So she stopped recording and performing in the mid-60s after she had a heart attack and became a switchboard operator. in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, all the way through the 70s until she passed away.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow. Married four times. She was married to Harry James's saxophonist, Claude Lackey. They married for 8 years, and she married John Hollingsworth Morris, and he became a film and TV director, and they stayed married for about 5 years, and then she married Frank E. Taylor, who became her manager. She was getting her car worked on in Chicago before she drove to Miami, and she encountered him, and they got married, and they had a daughter, and that didn't last very long because then she married a guy named William Henry Gailey. He was a jazz guitarist, and they performed together until she had a heart attack in the mid-60s. She quit performing and became a phone operator.
What wow.
An interesting life. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That would be a movie and a half.
And how funny that she became a telephone operator when her song was, I've been waiting for your phone call for 18 years.
That's right. Yeah.
So you mentioned that she performed at the Palmer with, was it?
Orrin Tucker.
Orrin Tucker. So she never actually married him.
I guess not.
Out of the four guys.
I have the recording of them announcing their engagement. Maybe it never worked out.
Maybe she was just a serial marriage. Forgive me, wee Bonnie.
Perhaps. And she also recorded. There was a recording studio. I've got some recordings of her out of a studio in, I think, Arlington Heights or Des Plaines called Cahill Records. Hmm. So interesting that she recorded for a record label in the Northwest suburbs in the late 50s or early 60s, kind of in the twilight of her career. She was out this way, so she has a strong Midwest connection. So
yeah.
There's another reason why I pulled that. And Orrin Tucker was educated in, he grew up in Wheaton, Illinois, west suburbs, and I think went to North Central College and
really?
Started a band, yeah.
Huh.
But way back, he just died maybe in the last 10 or 15 years. He was 100.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Music's been very, very good to a lot of these people.
Yeah, a lot of longevity, so.
Yeah.
It was kind of interesting.
Just a few more minutes with our resident music archivist, Don Romano, and you should check out his Facebook page, facebook.com/Don's American Songbook. And we wanted to wrap up with a song that you had talked about the last time you were on with it. You want to explain what this is and how old it is?
Yes. So at our last time I was here, I brought in a recording of Irving Berlin. I think, I forgot which one I played. Give Me Your Tired, Your Poor, I think.
Yes, for 4th of July.
Yes, for 4th of July. And then I mentioned that that was not the only song that he recorded. Actually, the one commercially available recording that he did was a song from 1910 called Oh, How That German Could Love, which is a very goofy song.
No.
Yeah.
I think,
believe it or not.
Just as the show was ending, you laid that on us, and that's how we happened to do tonight, because we said, oh, you have to come back and share that with us.
Now, put this in context. 1910.
Yeah.
Oh, How That German Could Love. What was the inspiration for the song? What was it?
You know, I don't know too much about it. And there's not a whole lot of information about the song. It was featured in a musical. It was sort of interpolated later into the show at a later point. It kind of has an odd history. And why he chose to record this one, I don't know. Up to that point, he had written a couple songs that were pretty popular. Call Me Up Some Rainy Afternoon. He was, you know, this is just before he wrote Alexander's Ragtime Band, which kind of set him on a really big trajectory. But he wrote his first song in 1907. So this is very early on in his career.
Do you have any idea back in 1910, where were they recording? What was passing as a recording studio back in 1910?
I'm trying to think. Probably Camden, New Jersey. They might have been recording there at the RCA. I'm trying to think where else this would have been recording. But I think that was in the acoustic era, or largely the acoustic era, where you kind of sung into this big... Oh gosh, I don't
like a screen,
almost like a type of gramophone.
Yes,
and it was all into one, you know, this one kind of tube like thing, and you'd put the vocalist in front and you'd put the band in back because the vocalist had to project. And you can hear he's really projecting in this song, and he had a very booming voice. He was a singing waiter in early on in his career at a bar, and. And so you could really hear, you know, you could hear that voice. Yeah. And these novelty songs where they sort of poked fun at different ethnicities was a very popular genre at the time. And this just happened to be a German-themed sort of ethnic novelty song, they would call
it. But it's positive, because this is a man that I assume is in love with a German.
Yeah, yeah.
Or smitten by a German.
Smitten by a German, yes. And just the lyrics read, it's just ridiculous. So I don't know what the circumstances were for recording this. But it was a commercial release, and it was on a couple. I have a couple different records with different labels on it. So it was released.
In 1910.
1910, yes.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay, well, that's the build. Now, we're not going to play all of it, because, again, the quality is not the best. But 1910, and this is the legendary Irving Berlin.
Once I got stuck on a sweet little German, and oh, but a German was she. The best part was walking, there must be talking, but Swiss made to order for me. So lovely and busy, more yet she was pretty, you don't know until you have lies. She had such a figure, it couldn't be bigger, und there was some more yet besides. Oh, how that German could love, with a feeling that came from the heart. She called me her honey, her angel, her money. She wished every bird out too smart. And she spoke like a speaker, and oh, what a speech, like no other speech it could speak. Ach, my, but a German, and she is Sir Herman. It stood on a cheek for the beat and more yet too.
Irving Berlin, what a figure. It couldn't have been bigger.
And there was some more yet beside. And then that last line, ach, my, what a German. When she kissed her Herman, it stayed on my cheek for a week.
They're pretty absurd. And he only wrote the lyrics to that. The music was by a guy named Ted Snyder, who we collaborated with very early on in his career. But otherwise, Irving Berlin was mostly a one-man show. But yeah. Early on in his career, he was writing with people. That was from a show called The Girl and the Wizard, introduced by someone named Sam Bernard. So names that we don't know, musicals that have not really survived the test of time, so to speak. But in terms of, you know, I think a lot of scholars know the songs, but less known today. So that's kind of, I guess, what started it all here. But interesting to just hear him. And I mean, you think that he wrote his first song in 1907, Marie from Sunny Italy, that he was performing when he was a singing waiter at the Pelham Cafe in Chinatown in New York. And you think this was just a few years later. So you really kind of get his voice as it might have sounded when he was just very early on in his career starting. So.
And again, 1910, no overdubbing, no nothing.
No.
Just as John said, one guy standing as close to the microphone as possible with the orchestra behind him. And what you heard was what they did.
That's pretty amazing.
What are you looking for? What are you on the hunt for now? Because you're always coming up with some wonderful, rare stuff.
Besides a cart machine.
Yeah, a cart machine would be on the top of my list for Santa. But otherwise, I would say any kind of like homemade recordings are always fun. I've gotten a couple homemade recordings that people will have, you know, just take songs from the radio off of. I always enjoy hearing those. They're homemade recordings that someone's speaking to a microphone onto a record. I have a couple like that, and those are just so interesting for me to hear.
Don't we have a recording of you when you were like four? That your father made?
My dad worked for Southwark Steel during the day, and at night he repaired radios and TVs and record players. And this one time he had this record player that allowed you to record things and to make sure that he'd fixed it correctly. I mean, you would literally put the needle down on the disc, and as the needle was on the disc, you would sing into this almost like a little megaphony thing, and it recorded it right on that piece of it was kind of a flexible kind of vinyl.
Mm-hmm. And you were singing a Halloween song,
yeah,
right, at 4 years old.
Witches ride on Halloween, ho, ho, ho. Their coats are black and their eyes are green, ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho.
Every witch has a big black hat, ho, 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 and every witch has a big black cat, ho, ho, ho. Why do I remember those lyrics to this day?
That's great.
That's
but that leads us to the next time that
yes.
Don Romano is going to join us.
You think
us.
We don't plan this show?
That's right.
We are going to be playing Halloween songs, right?
I'll dig some out. Absolutely.
All right. Wacky, spooky songs from a long time ago.
If anybody is listening to us and they have a card machine, how should they contact you? Email or anything?
Or through us?
Yeah.
Or through contact
sure.
us okay. and we'll pass okay. it along to you?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if you have that record collection that you know, you're saying, I got nothing to do with Grandma's record collection, and there's Don on the radio. That young man needs that collection.
That's right. I need it.
Oh, it's such a cool thing to have you in here and have you share this music with us. And I'm just grinning because it's just silly stuff. But it's so nice to be able to remember this from like 114
yeah.
years ago.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. So thank you for letting me.
Well, thank
bring
you.
It in.
And we'll see you then closer to Halloween. And we've already decided we can do a Christmas show with Don. And we'll work you, man.
I'm here for okay. it. I love it.
Are we going to get to hear the Steve King recording when he was 4 years old in Halloween?
I'm going to have to see if I can find that. And if I can, we'd have to have it digitized.
Yeah.
So
it was actually on vinyl, which was
a real flexible kind of vinyl.
I have the playback for that. Actually, I have one of those machines where you could cut records, and I have some blank records, so maybe one day
oh,
I'll cut
boy.
A record.
And I think the flip side of that was my brother singing something about a turkey song for...
for Thanksgiving.
Mr. Turkey said gobble, 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 or something like that.
Okay. Well, Don, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Nice to have you.
Thank you for being here.
Don Romano is our music archivist, and again, he's active on Facebook, and with some of the things that we talked about, you can see him at his songbook page on Facebook, and you can get to us if you'd like to get to him. What a treat to have him in studio with us, because this is a guy, as I said before when he was with us, he wears a couple of hats. He's Dr. Don Romano, who is also an attorney. Kind of achieved a few things in his life, right? And this is his passion, is collecting the old music and doing mm-hmm. the research on it. And how fun that he's got one of those record players, recorders, whatever that you could actually sing into and, mm-hmm. and make floppy disks on. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I got to see. I know I've got that someplace.
I know you do. You've got everything.
But I couldn't have been more than about 4 years old.
Oh, that's what your dad said. You were
and
four.
And it's weird. I can remember that night as clear as I'm sitting here talking to you. We were in the living room at our house at 8039 Manistee. My dad was sitting in a chair, and he had just fixed this recording record player. And before he got it back to the person who owned it in good shape, he wanted to test it and have my brother Lee and I both record something. So Lee recorded one song, and I recorded the other song.
And you realize that that could have been the beginning for you. Your desire to be a musician, to be a singer, to be a recording artist. It all started when you were four, when you said, this is so exciting.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm hearing myself. That's pretty amazing. A listener from 224 area code said, you struck a chord with me, Steve. We were neighbors. I grew up in Lansing, Illinois. My dad worked at Republic Steel at 116th and Avenue O, also mm-hmm. known as Burnham Avenue in Lansing.
Yep.
I'll forgive Kurt, who said earlier, you need to play some Arthur Godfrey. No, I'll be okay if we don't play any Arthur Godfrey.
The only Arthur Godfrey song I ever liked as a kid was The Man with the Weird Beard.
No, no, no. No, 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 no.
It was
kind of... Do not look at Julian like that.
Oh, Julian.
No, no, no.
Just a little bit. Arthur Godfrey, The Man with the Weird Beard. It ain't red, it ain't white, it ain't blue.
It's stupid.
It was one of his only actual semi-hit records. You got it?
Oh, jeez.
Beaver. Beaver. Straggly, raggly hair on his chin. Battered and tattered and ugly as sin. Eagle-eyed and floppy-eared. He's the man with a weird beard. Who is he? What is he? Nobody knows. Both of his heels are as bare as his toes. Never had his whiskers sheared. He's the man with a weird beard. It ain't black, it ain't white, it ain't short, it ain't long, it ain't right. It's the craziest garden of hair. Seven robins live in there. Walk with him, talk with him, what do you find? More on his chin than he's got on his mind. That's the story that I hear about the man with a weird beard.
As a kid, I loved this song.
You know, listening to it with my headphones on, I realized he had a really good voice.
Oh, he did. Yeah.
I don't know why that song always bothered me. Well, maybe it's because you would sing it to me and aggravate me with it.
Yeah, there's that.
We see a guy with a weird beard.
Godfrey was such a weird guy because for a long time, it's almost like the movie A Face in the Crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Godfrey was beloved. And this is, Julian, way before your time. Arthur Godfrey was huge on a radio. He was on television. He wound up having about two or three shows a week on television. He did Arthur Godfrey's Talent Scouts. He did a midday show. And things started turning around for him when on the air he fired one of his performers, Julius LaRosa, who had had several hit records. And after one of the songs that Julie did, Arthur said something like, "Well, I hope you enjoyed Julie's last performance with us." I mean, he literally fired him on the air.
Why?
I don't remember the specifics of it. He thought that Julie was getting too full of himself, which Julie didn't. Julius LaRosa went on to make more records and to be a very successful New York radio personality.
Mm-hmm.
Then there were also, Elvis Presley failed the audition for Arthur Godfrey's Talent Scouts.
So it was 1953 when LaRosa was fired on the air. And he was very popular at that time. LaRosa was in the Navy when Godfrey heard him sing and invited him to appear on his show. After his discharge, LaRosa became a star on the show from 51 to 53, recording several hits. And Godfrey liked to exert control over his entertainers, making demands and restricting their outside work in return for exposure mm-hmm. on his popular show. Without Godfrey's approval, LaRosa recorded for Cadence Records, mm-hmm. formed by Godfrey's orchestra leader, Archie Blyer, and had hit singles including Anywhere I Wander and My Lady Loves to Dance.
Cadence Records, Archie discovered and issued the first records for the Everly Brothers.
Oh, okay. Well, apparently LaRosa's popularity bothered Godfrey so much that in 53, LaRosa was due to begin the TV portion of Godfrey's show, but it was kept waiting backstage until the final minutes of the radio-only part of the program. As he finished singing Manhattan, LaRosa and the audience heard Godfrey precede his sign-off by saying, "Oh, that was Julie's swan song with us." Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And apparently there were a few other things that revealed that Arthur Godfrey was not the lovable munchkin that he wanted everybody to think he was.
The story goes that he felt that people should have humility. Humility.
But he didn't.
In showbiz, yes. Wow. We're going to take a break. It's that time of the month when we have a conversation about cars with our buddy Tom Appel. And that's coming up with a whole lot more here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Leonard Skinner, Sweet Home Alabama. And some of the surviving members of Leonard Skinner are appearing at
Thursday night
at
Ravinia.
Ravinia.
Yeah, it's going to be a hopping place. So I told you when I read that they were going to be at Ravinia, I thought that'd be a great place to see Skinner.
Mm-hmm.
Place is going to go up for grabs when they do Freebird. You know,
of course.
It's going to be nuts. I saw Leonard Skinner for the first time 50 years ago.
So that would have been 74.
I could not even wrap my mind around the fact that it was 50 years ago. In Tennessee, I saw them. They were, you know, people were kind of like, well, there's this little band. They're making some waves. They've been playing the dive bars and such.
That was really the early days of the whole Southern rock thing.
Yeah, because Marshall Tucker was on the same bill with Leonard Skinner. And
now, where'd you see them?
University of Tennessee.
Okay, so Leonard Skinner, Marshall Tucker.
And Charlie Daniels.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Pretty good lineup. I think, for some reason, I think Elvin Bishop was also in that
sitting
lineup.
Sitting on a bale of hay?
Yeah. Ain't good looking, but he sure can play. So I was thinking, all right, so that song... It still works.
50 years ago.
It still
works.
Plays.
Yep.
It's still a toe tapper. Freebird, even though it's become a cliche, it works. Okay.
Yeah.
So in 1974, if I'd been listening to something that was 50 years earlier,
mm-hmm.
Now that blows my mind. I would have been listening to Rhapsody in Blue by George Gershwin.
From 1924.
Right. It Had to Be You by Isham Jones. 1924, again, a hit record. California, Here I Come, Al Jolson. Amapola? By Joseph Lacalle, which was a Spanish song that was later translated into English and covered by many artists, but it was first heard in 1924.
I think you also would have been listening to, I believe, the first hit version of My Blue Heaven by, I blanked out on the guy. Anyhow, Johnny and I were talking about this earlier in the week, and to my ears, I know music has changed, but there isn't as much difference to my ears in music from 1974 and 2024
right.
as there would be from 1974 to
1924. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Irving Berlin was also rounding out the top five songs mm-hmm. from 1924. But again, that was just kind of a mind meld that I had because I went, wow, 50 years. That's crazy.
So, Julian, 50 years ago, does any music from 50 years ago resonate with you?
Oh, yeah. I listen to old music all the time. See, 50 years ago, what did we say? That was 74?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, God. That was
the best music, by the way.
That was the year my dad was born.
Mm-hmm. So, you grew up listening to things that he loved.
Oh, yeah. One of them being The Doors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A lot of people say, well, the 80s, the best music. No, 70s, best era. Well, you were in music radio, and you got played to death, and so there are songs
But objectively, if I had to pick, and I've said this before, if I had to pick one decade, and I wouldn't want to do that because I like all kinds of music, which mm-hmm. is why the one decade I would pick would be the 60s, because in the 60s, you had The Doors, you had Frank Sinatra, you had Elvis, you mm-hmm. had Peggy Lee.
And the Beatles.
You had this wonderful mix of all kinds of, Louis Armstrong.
Aretha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Aretha, yeah. You had everything in the 60s. So that's why I would go with the 60s, because it was a little bit of everything.
And you could turn on the radio and you would hear an instrumental
right?
Followed by a hard rock song, followed by a Frank Sinatra. I mean, that was that was a great time. You're absolutely right. I agree with you, but it's just, you know, the soundtrack of your life. You're like, okay, this was the best music there was. Yeah. And that would be the 70s. By the way, with Skynyrd on Thursday night at Ravinia, ZZ Top.
Yeah.
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 You look up cool, you're talking ZZ Top still to this day. So that's going to be a hot ticket. Apparently, their lawn tickets are available for that on Thursday night at Ravinia. Ravinia's the place to be for the next few nights.
Well, they've got some good shows.
Tomorrow night, it's The Roots and this wonderful young woman, Samara Joy.
In fact, we're going to play something by Samara a little later.
Right. She won a couple of Grammys last year at the age of 23. And I remember Dee Alexander, a legendary performer that we're lucky enough to still have here in Chicago. We had her on the show a couple of months ago, and we said, well, who's out there that you're excited about? And she said, Ms. Joy, you watch her. She's going places. And sure enough, she won a bunch of Grammys last year.
As she should.
Yep. And she'll be at Ravinia tomorrow night.
There's so much going on this weekend. And in fact, we've got some things we're going to use as music bumps a little later. To Pink, Soldier Field tonight.
Yes, yes. If you're
and what a wonderful performance at the DNC with Pink and her daughter.
If you're just driving home from Soldier Field, from that show, the weather was perfect. And what she's just a fabulous performer. But when she came out with her group and her daughter, 12 years old, Willow, what a voice.
Yeah.
Any chance you saw that, Julian? Because that child was, she's a star. She really is.
No, I was busy working.
Getting up in the middle of the night to work, right?
Yeah.
I didn't see it either, but it's crazy when you talk about her daughter performing, because I remember when she put out her first single over 20 years ago, I was a senior in high school.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
Yeah.
we'll play that from the DNC a little later tonight. We got a lot coming up. Tom Appel is going to join us and talk cars and how to buy a car. So stay with us at WGN Radio.
Don't know about a boogie like me and you. We're going to boogie. We're going to boogie.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. I love that song, and it has been recorded so many times by so many different people with so many different titles. That is one of Tom's tunes for tonight, Tom being the publisher of Consumer Guide, Tom Appel. Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I am well, thank you.
What is the theme for the Tom's Tunes this week?
Tonight's theme is a little bit general, perhaps, but it's guitar party.
Okay.
Worked for me.
And that was?
That was Magic Sam off his classic album, West Side Soul, from 1968. And that, I don't think that's a lost album. I think a lot of people know that album and appreciate it.
Yeah.
And that was I Feel So Good.
and that song has been redone in so many different configurations. At some point, we may dig up a version of a song called I've Been Twistin' by Jerry Lee Lewis, where he basically took that song and they adapted it to language involving the twist, where I've been twistin' till the break of day. But that happens a lot with some of the old blues songs. That people just decide, we can recycle that and use it as whatever.
And not pay the guy who originally wrote and recorded the song. We'll just move on and make money ourselves off of it, right?
Well, there are so many jazz staples like that, too. Like, I think it was a few weeks ago, maybe it was a couple of months ago when I joined you guys, we covered the song Manteca, which it seems like every serious jazz artist has done a version of.
Yeah.
It's a requirement.
It is,
All right. We've got so much to cover tonight.
Before we get to a lot of the things we're going to cover, and it will involve shopping for cars and things you should know, I'd like to address a text from a 608 area code. Says, Steve and Johnny, could you ask Tom, did he get a look at new Tahoes yet, and any information?
Uh, have not driven the new Tahoe. It's coming out now. And we're talking about General Motors' large SUV, mechanically very similar to the Suburban, which is just a long version of the Tahoe. And it's getting a needed tech update for 2025. Nothing mechanical changes, though the interior is updated slightly. The big news is the dashboard. And like so many other cars and trucks these days, it's going to get a contiguous instrument panel. And by that, I mean that the actual instrument panel in front of the driver and the touchscreen in front of the center console is now a single piece. And it's bigger, it's easier to read. And it's very common to happen now, and that's what's happening to the Tahoe. Plus, there's some interior tweaks and some styling updates. It's not very different mechanically, though.
The dashboard, to me... Some of the new dashboards I like, some of them I don't, some of them I think they're too busy.
Some of them I just hate.
I do like the option that on some of those contiguous dashboards, you can kind of turn off the passenger side so it doesn't distract you.
Was it in the Jeep that we were road testing where the passengers could watch the passenger, the front seat passenger could watch video?
Yeah.
Yep.
The Jeep Grand Cherokee and Jeep Grand Wagoneer has that option.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That's an idea. we were good without that.
It's interesting technology, and as we've talked about for weeks, basically we are now driving computers on wheels.
Yeah,
we very much are. And in fact, vehicles are referred to as software driven now. And this is a goal. Manufacturers are trying to make vehicles as software based and not as mechanically based as possible. There's a lot of good that comes from that, like over the air updates and things of that nature. But if something glitchy does happen, there is a chance that your whole vehicle just locks up.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're running into things like that now, too, where certain systems will sort of fail and control the whole vehicle. And that's unfortunate. We'll get past that. But it is weird. There are some teething pains right now.
Well, speaking of that, should we segue into one of the stories that we wanted to talk about that you sent us a notification about phantom braking? What's this all about?
Yeah, this is an interesting story, and it dovetails nicely or poorly with another story, and that's that we talked recently about how by 2029, the federal government is going to have put in place a bunch of standards for automatic emergency braking. And the systems are in place now. They're standard on most vehicles. They're not required by law yet, but they are standard on a lot of vehicles, and they're very effective at helping you brake in advance of a crash, maybe because you weren't paying attention, obstacle avoidance in case of pedestrian walks in front of you. The systems work pretty well, but the problem is the government's looking for expanded capability, including high-speed capability on the highway. And as these systems become more sophisticated, they're making bigger and bigger mistakes, unfortunately. And we're running into a series of situations where certain cars, especially, it's happening across the board, but there are certain models that are overly affected by very sensitive systems that are phantom braking for things that do not exist. And if you're not about to have a crash, your car responding like it is startling and awful.
Yeah.
So help me understand how this happens. Now, I know, for example, in the car that Johnny and I just bought about a year and a half ago, there are all kinds of cameras all over the place, and they're kind of reading the road. My supposition would be that the phantom braking could be caused by a faulty camera read on the part of the car. Could that be because of fog or some water or something on the camera, or am I going in the wrong direction here?
No, you're going in the right direction, Steve, and there are a few things here. Dirty sensors are one problem, and people really should think about cleaning those when they go to a gas station to fill up. But railroad crossings are a problem. Shadows are a problem.
Shadows.
Overhead structures are a problem. Yeah, and this is an interesting one that I hadn't considered. Reflections of your car in another car are a problem.
That's sensitive.
Yeah.
How would that work? So, like, if you're coming up on another car and the car has a shiny finish and it sees your car reflected in the...
Then your car thinks it's going to hit that car, so then it breaks?
Yeah, yes, that's exactly what's happening. Wow. Basically, your car does not know or does not fully understand what a reflection is and does not know that it doesn't have mass or doesn't pose a threat. In some cases, obviously, they know enough because it's not happening that often. But it's a thing to consider, and it is upsetting some of these systems.
That's wild.
So what is the solution? Because you can't, to my knowledge, you can't disengage these systems. So what option do you have?
The option is...
Pray. right?
Prayer can't hurt. We are waiting for these systems to become more sophisticated. The good news is that there are a few vehicles that are highly affected by this, and a lot of vehicles that are working just fine. A couple of recalls for this right now. The 2023 Fisker Ocean, there aren't very many of those. A bunch of Teslas. The 2018 through 2019 Volkswagen Atlas and Atlas Cross Sport. 2017 through 2018 Nissan Rogue. And I had one more here, I think. No, I guess that's it. Oh, other General Motors midsize pickups. And I didn't get a lot of clarification on that, but I think that is the new generation of the Colorado and Canyon. And there are recalls for these, and you should be notified soon if you own one. But they are going to update the software. And software updates are basically the only solution to this.
Wow.
Yeah.
But now, I have so many questions. okay, so you should clean the sensors, but I would venture to say the average person listening to us right now doesn't know where all of the sensors on their new car are. And certainly you could find that information by looking in your manual. But and the average person is not going to take the time while they're filling up to clean all the sensors.
No, the best thing you can do is just hose off your front and rear bumper. If you remember to do that occasionally, you're good. Also, if you take your car through a car wash once a week or so, you're probably good as well. There are sensors also located in the rearview mirrors, the outside rearview mirrors.
Right.
So if you think of it, hose those off too. But a quick duck through a car wash every now and then is a good solution.
We were told you should not drive through a car wash.
You want to do a hand car wash.
Because the sensors will be malfunctioning if you do.
If you get water in some of the sensors.
You want to go touchless.
Yes.
I've not heard that the sensors are water sensitive, and they shouldn't be. They're located on bumpers, which seem like a place where they would get very wet. There might be car wash, touch car washes where maybe they put the sensors in some sort of peril. So go touchless.
And I think specifically some of the vehicles that we were looking at, they were saying you don't want that hard stream of water on the car because it could the force of it would somehow impact some of the cameras.
I could see that. And one of the issues, too, might not be damaging the camera, but misaligning it.
Yeah, repositioning them. Yeah.
So it's which is actually a problem now when you have an accident in a vehicle and you have the front bumpers, say, replaced. A lot of these tech centers, these repair centers, not as good as they could be at realigning those sensors.
Well, because you almost have to be a computer tech to do it.
Yeah.
Exactly right. I mean, that's not your area of expertise, and it's asking a lot.
It is asking a lot. You're absolutely correct. It's a strange new thing for a tech to have to learn.
Yeah. All right. We're talking cars with Tom. We're going to spend a few minutes tonight because a couple of people have asked over the past few months, could we just spend a few minutes and talk about what you should know when you go out to buy a car, whether it's new or used. So we will talk about that. We've got some recalls coming up. We're going to talk a little bit about the wacky colors that Jeep is naming their car because I love it. All that and more here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Believe it or not, we're talking cars with the publisher of Consumer Guide, Tom Appel. That's one of Tom's tunes. And tonight's theme, Tom, is
Guitar Party.
And that was?
That was Albert King, Night Stomp, off the album Live Wire Blues Power from 1968.
Albert King always loved to put his guitar through an amplifier that had lots of reverb on it.
Was that a Fender guitar?
No, he was playing, if I recall correctly, he was playing a Gibson Flying V.
Really? Because it's got such high...
Because he turned all the bass down and turned the treble.
That's what
all
I was
the
missing,
out.
The bass.
Yeah.
Is Albert King the guy that we saw... Never mind. I'm sorry I took you there.
Bizarre date story. Johnny and I, pre-marriage, dating, we realized there was something going on with us. I had these tickets to go to see a broadcast. It was going to be a taping for Channel 11. And it featured, I'm trying to think of the artist, the guitar player.
I'm looking
Bleep.
At Yeah.
And I can picture him.
Yeah.
Anyhow, so it was in Chicago. We're there, and he comes off the stage, and he's walking through the crowd playing his guitar, and the camera is following him. And Johnny and I are trying to hide away from the camera as they come right up to us because I was going through divorce and Johnny still had a boyfriend that she hadn't told she wasn't going to be her boyfriend anymore.
Oh, no!
So we were trying.
No! And so he stops and he's playing guitar by our table. And I'm going, no!
Albert Collins.
Move on, man. Move on.
And,
and of course, this was the classic case. He just lingered by us.
Yeah.
And they go, yeah, this is going to be a PBS special.
Yeah.
No, please don't.
So there we were all over Channel 11. Of course, by the time it aired, our respective
we had moved on. But I think during the time he was playing, I'm looking at my feet. I've got my hand on my head like I've got a migraine trying to hide. Golly. Before we take a break for news, I've got
And we really, really, really are going to talk about the car buying experience.
Right, some tips for car buying. I have a recall on BMWs. Do you have this one, Tom?
A huge recall, correct?
Yeah.
I think it was for the water pumps.
Yes, 720,000 Beemers
recalled. It's almost every model. I think it's every model with a 2-liter turbo based on the numbers that are the models included in this, but it's an enormous recall.
From 2012 to 2018, 720,796 vehicles. Apparently, the water pump malfunction can actually cause a fire.
Probably not. I mean, that's a worst case scenario.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen first is you're going to get all sorts of warning lights. And if you ignore them, then yes, you could see a fire. But you don't want to ignore your engine light, in this case especially.
You're going to get a recall, a notice, and this is not a software update. This is a case of they're going to replace the water pump and plug connector as necessary and install a protective shield, and all that's going to be for free because it's going to be part of your actual recall. And as you said, Tom, some of the vehicles included are the X1, X3, X4, X5, and from 2012 to 2018.
Yeah, the X3 and the X5 are by far BMW's best-selling vehicles, so a lot of people affected by this.
And again, you might say, well, you know, this is a car that's 10 years old. These cars have longevity.
Yeah.
There are a lot of them that are 10 years old on the road today because of their longevity. So,
and that's a thing, too. Cars are lasting so much longer than they used to. We don't realize it because cars don't age like they used to.
Yeah. They don't rust out like they used to.
Right, right.
Well,
they look better longer.
That's true. In fact, our how old is ours now? Like 17 years old?
Yeah, we have a 2005 DeVille DTS, and it still runs.
We bought it in 2007. Yeah.
Still feels like a new car.
Yeah, and it looks good. We will come right back with Tom Appel talking cars here on WGN.
King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We're talking cars with Tom Appel from Consumer Guide Automotive. And that is one of Tom's tunes. Tom, that is what by who?
That is J.B. Stomp by J.B. Hudo and the Newhawks off the album Live at the Shabu Inn from 1979.
I love the name, the Shabu Inn.
I was just looking in case you asked about that. It was an old, huge, wooden barn-like place in Connecticut. Just a lot of bands went there to play. It doesn't look like a nice place, but it looks like a party place.
Okay. That's a great lyric. It wasn't a nice place, but it was a party place. Okay. We've had a lot of people wanting to hear some thoughts on the car buying process. And you've been doing some research and checking out some stuff, so what do we need to know?
Yeah, one of the questions that's come up a couple of times in the last few weeks when you and I, when you guys and I were talking, was about ordering a vehicle or vehicles being on order. And one of the questions that came up was, can I negotiate a vehicle on order? And the truth is, you can negotiate anything when you're buying a car. So don't be afraid to ask and don't be afraid to try. But one of the things that I've learned, there is a discrepancy between what people are hearing from dealers right now and what seems to be the actual case. And that's that Honda and Toyota vehicles are not quite as rare as people are hearing. They do have stock, they do have inventory. And while it may be hard to find certain vehicles, like the RAV4 hybrid, for example, or a CRV hybrid, those can still be negotiated on, and you may have to wait for them, especially if you're picky about color or trim level. But the fact is, they're there, they're available, and they're not as rare as you're being told.
I want to add something to the thought of, or the question of, can you negotiate? We had an interesting conversation with our car dealer. We had to take our car in this past week, and we told him what we're going to be talking about, and we asked the question about negotiations. And he said, and I'm curious to hear what you think, he said, it depends on the kind of vehicle you're buying. And we said, what do you mean? He said, we can't give any discounts on the electric vehicles we're selling. Basically, we're selling them at cost, so there is no room for discounts on electric vehicles.
Didn't he say they don't make anything on the sales of electric vehicles, so they're not going to bring it down, you know, $500 to $1,000.
So are you hearing anything about that?
No, and I think what he's suggesting is that they can't negotiate off the advertised price, because there is the same amount of dealer markup built into the price of an EV as there is built into other vehicles. So off the retail price, you absolutely can negotiate the price of an EV, but because dealers are a little bit leery of them and they want to move them quickly off the lot, they don't want them to linger, they may be discounting them. So the advertised price may be a steep discount, which the dealer or the salesperson is not allowed to discount off of. Additionally, there's a lot to think about when you're buying an EV, because you can maybe qualify for the federal tax credit, the federal tax incentive. Plus, a lot of manufacturers, including Hyundai and Kia, their vehicles generally do not qualify for the tax credit, the factory is offsetting that with a discount of the same amount. So there's a lot there to process and a lot there to research.
Mm-hmm. This dealer gave us the impression that the dealership really didn't want to be selling EVs to begin with,
and they were kind of
forced to. So that was one of the reasons he was saying they had to sell them at whatever the price was, and they really didn't have any room for any negotiation when it came to it, because they just wanted to get them out,
so
that's it.
Yeah, because he said now we have stock, you know, unlike the days when there was shortages and, of course, COVID. He says now we've got stock. We need room for this stock, but we have to carry a certain number of EVs. And we were kind of surprised by the whole idea that they're being forced to carry them.
And they're not being forced. The manufacturer can't do that to a dealer. Dealers are independent business owners, and they don't have to do things like carry a certain amount of inventory. However, the manufacturer can incentivize a dealer to take EVs so they can get more of popular product. So a lot of these things that sound like absolutes are a little bit fuzzier than that. But mm-hmm. say you're talking about a Genesis dealer, for example, the slow-selling GV60, which is a subcompact electric crossover, which is a delight, by the way, not moving very quickly. So it's possible that Genesis is saying to the dealer, if you want more very popular GV80s, for example, you have to sell three of these, and then we can put you on the list for more of the inventory for the other vehicles. So these sound like absolutes. They're not rules, but there is all sorts of really fuzzy sort of backroom dealings going on. And I think that when you come down to the salesman level, they feel like rules.
Mm-hmm. That sounds really logical, too.
It reminds me, in fact, I think there is probably a whole different program in, how do I want to phrase this? What major manufacturers tell retail outlets they must do in order to sell their product. For example, Guitar Store, that we're very familiar with, they were told by one of the major manufacturers, I'll tell you who it was. It was Gibson Guitars, said, you have to care. You don't get to tell us what you want. We're going to tell you what you're going to carry.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, wait a minute, we know our customers, but Gibson wanted them to carry banjos and a whole bunch of things.
Yeah, and they said, banjos don't sell here.
And they wound up saying to Gibson, hang it on your nose, we're going someplace else. But my point is, there are some manufacturers that will tell some retail outlets, if you want to carry our product, this is what you have to carry.
Yeah.
There is a funny reverse situation like this, too. We've heard recently, too, that the Jaguar lineup has been pared down to a single model. But Jaguar are looking to sort of consolidate its operations. Jaguar is part of Jaguar Land Rover,
right.
Same company, basically, in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Dealers have been offered, in exchange for giving up their Jaguar franchises, access to additional popular Land Rover and Range Rover products. Like the Defender is very popular right now, and I think the top line Range Rover is as well. So to kind of clean house and to line up fewer dealers, because Jaguar sells so slowly, the manufacturers are making these deals. And these were deals. You didn't have to do it, but there was a handshake there. And I'm sure at some level, if you're trying to sell products at these places, they just feel like rules.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. We had conflicting reports talking to the service manager versus a very, very successful salesman. What about the amount of time it should take you to complete the process of buying a vehicle? Sales manager said...
Now, this is after you've decided which vehicle you want.
Sales manager said, count on 4 hours. 4 hours. Salesman said, an hour. You'll be in and out of here.
And we just went back to our most recent car buying experience, and it was four hours. Now, this is once we had decided what vehicle we want.
Mm-hmm.
4 hours of your life is going to be spent dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's. And
especially if you're going through the finance department. And in our case, we were told, if you finance even a scintilla of the price, we will give you a $2,000 bonus for financing, $5,000, $10,000, whatever, because apparently the dealership makes money with the financing.
Right.
Right, Tom?
Well, they do, and there's something else going on there, too. A lot of manufacturers, a lot of brands have access to what they call a captive lender, like GMAC famously used to be for General Motors. And they often want some access to the consumer to sign up for a loan. And you can sign up for a loan and pay it off next week, mm-hmm. but you will get credit for that loan. And the guy in the F&I box, your finance and insurance guy, is going to get credit for a loan.
Uh-huh.
So there's a lot of incentive there for them to sell you a loan. And as for telling people how long it takes, I used to sell cars, and I remember on very nice spring Saturdays, people did not want to spend 4 hours at a dealer.
Right.
So we were strongly encouraged to make that process seem shorter. Because if you come in, you're ready to buy an Explorer, which was super hot when I was selling cars, the Explorer, and someone came in and like, wow, I really want this. How long is it going to take me to get out of here? If you tell them 4 hours, they're going to be like, I got to get to a barbecue. I got to pick up my dry cleaning.
Yeah.
Right. You don't want them to leave. So you'll tell them anything less than 4 hours to keep them in the store.
Well, when you were selling, did you have to do that routine? Well, let me go talk to my manager, come back and back. And because our salesman said, well, we don't do that anymore. And that may be true. You know, especially in recent years when they didn't have that much product, and so you, the buyer, might have been kind of in between a rock and a hard place. You want a car? This is all we got. You're going to take this car.
But I will never forget, and this was years ago when we bought an Oldsmobile touring sedan, and we were really interested in it. We knew what the price should be. And we were dealing with a salesperson who spent, he'd gone back and forth to his manager about three different times. And I just got fed up with it. And I said, okay, here's the deal. This is the price. We know this is the price. If you want to make a sale, that's the price. If you go back to see your manager one more time, we're out of here. We got it for the price.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, but that was,
I did not know you guys owned a touring sedan. What a cool car.
It was.
They were wonderful cars.
In fact, Tom, when we traded it in, the next week we went to the dealership and it was on the floor in the showroom with a spotlight on it where they were going, look at this cool car. And I went, wait, why did we get rid of it?
This was one of our all-time favorite cars. The Oldsmobile touring sedan was a great car.
Well, we had moved from the Sierra, which was also an excellent car.
It was a Cutlass Sierra,
Sierra. And then we moved to the... and all of them had one thing in common. In fact, the last four vehicles we had...
It was the 3.6 liter... 3.8 liter?
Yeah.
Tom, correct me on that.
Yeah, 3.8. And I believe in the touring sedan, it was supercharged.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
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 Mm. That was such a crazy car because it was based on the 98... Mm-hmm. Which was a very much a conservative kind of stodgy, chromy vehicle. And it was given this very interesting Oldsmobile European treatment. And the end product was not quite European, but it wasn't classic American luxury either. It was very sweet looking. It was slick and sort of understated and quick. It was a cool car.
And to this day, I remember very comfortable Lear Siegler bucket seats.
Oh, wow.
I forgot about Lear seats.
I did, too. And I sat in them for many, many hours.
Before we take a break, let's stay with financing for a second. Good idea to go in with your own bank financing or try to work a deal with the dealership?
If you can get pre-approved and you have a rate, you can use that to try to negotiate a better rate from the dealer. So definitely you want to go in there prepared and armed with a loan.
So talk to your bank before you go shopping so that you've got that little piece of information in your arsenal.
Yep, and if it's towards the end of the month and the F&I guy wants to hit a goal, he might be able to get you another 0.5% off.
Well, that's a good point,
too. So just hypothetically, if you're going in and you say, okay, my bank is giving me 5% financing, the finance guy would say, okay, we'll come down to 4.5%.
Hopefully, yes.
Mm-hmm. And end of the month. So we've got an end of the month coming up for folks who are in the market.
Yeah. The end of the month thing is absolutely true. Everyone's trying to hit their sales targets.
Mm-hmm. Tom Appel is our guest. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more Talking Cars here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. I like that a lot. That's one of Tom's tunes. Tom, who is that and what is that?
I think that was Matt Guitar Murphy's Matt's Guitar Boogie No. 2 from 1990.
Like that a lot. Yes, the same Matt Guitar Murphy that you saw in the Blues Brothers.
Oh, that's right.
Great track.
Yeah.
That's a guy who showed up in the Blues Brothers, enjoyed all that fame and recognition, and did not have an album to sell. It did not release one until 1990. So this is that album.
I got to get a copy of that album. And again,
that's a great album.
The name of the album is?
Way Down South.
Okay. That works for me. So we're talking about the car buying process, And there are so many things we want to get to. In fact, I'm going to do an audible. We're probably going to ask you if you can hang with us for at least one segment after the news. You okay with
sure,
that?
Sure.
So the question comes up, we're talking about buying the car. What about leasing? Is that still a viable thing in 2024, or what's the deal?
Interesting thing about leasing, during the chip shortage, when prices were escalating, lenders started to really shy away from leasing. And the problem was that the residual values were so difficult to calculate. When people were paying list or list plus 10% for a vehicle, these vehicles, the leases started to become a really bad deal because lenders were really scared of what the residual would be out 3 years. So they were calculating very low residuals, fearing, as did happen, that prices would collapse and that these leases would be very bad values. So leasing is only making a comeback right now. It's about 25%, still down from about a third of all transactions.
Boy, that is a change.
Yeah. Yeah, that used to be so enticing to lease a vehicle, have the vehicle of your dreams that you mm-hmm. thought you would never drive, but you too can have it. I just saw a figure, Tom, that 74% of all cars that are sold are, in fact, used cars. 74?
The used car market is so much bigger than the new car market, and we may not even know how big it is because a lot of those are private party sales,
right,
and those aren't tracked as accurately as used car sales through dealers. And a kind of a fun fact that not a lot of people know, new car dealers make more money generally off used car sales than they do new car sales. But part of the deal is that new car sales give them great credibility because they're a franchise dealer, and obviously they must play by rules and they have nice showrooms and things like that. But it is rare that a dealership makes more money on new cars than used.
Oh, that is interesting. I'm thinking about the time that we sold. In fact, it was the touring sedan, and we had the book.
And by the way, for people who have been asking and texting, yeah, it was a 1988 Oldsmobile touring sedan.
We had the book that had every ounce of gas that was ever put in the vehicle.
Yep.
And we actually sold that to the dealer for another $100. Because he said that will look good in the car when we sell it, because it was just handwritten, just the diary that you keep, where, yep, and little notes like, we're in Alabama and it's 97 degrees and gas is $2.10 a gallon. You know, all of that would be in the margin of the book. And he says, I'll give you $100 for the book if you'll pass it on. We went, yeah, sure. And that was in 92.
Yeah,
well, I used to do that when I owned a 1985 Volkswagen Scirocco that I loved and babied, and I kept mm-hmm. track of my fuel economy. And a great reason to do that, besides being a nerd, is that if there is a sudden change in your fuel economy,
yes,
and it's always for the worse,
yep,
you know something's wrong.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And you may not always feel it, but it's something relatively simple, usually like an oxygen sensor, but it can affect your fuel economy and it can affect the way the car runs, and you're not going to pass an emissions test if that's broken or just simply malfunctioning. So it's a great thing to do for that reason, too.
Yeah.
It gives you this much more control and understanding of your vehicle.
But it also,
that's something that we've done forever, and we do it today with our new cars.
Well, our Bonneville was 32 years old.
And we 92 had, Bonneville SSEI.
And we had every ounce of gas that was ever put in that mm-hmm. car. It was comforting to be able to look back and see that when gas prices were in the $4 range, oh, they had been there before. In
yeah.
that 30-year period, we forget that.
Mm-hmm.
Or you'd say, well, gas has never been this high, and I could go back and go, yeah, it was. And then again, comparing it from state to state, how different that would be, too. Alabama still has the cheapest gas we've
yeah, they
ever
do.
Encountered.
Right around the Montgomery area.
Absolutely.
What about negotiating? When you go into the dealership, what do you need to do other than check out Consumer Guide and find out everything you need to know about the cars?
Yeah, do some checking online, and it's so easy now. It used to be you had to go to a site like TrueCar
yes.
to get a sense of what a vehicle was selling for. But now every dealer sells, and there's so many secondary retailers now that dealers list through, and it's so easy to find out what a car is actually selling for. So you want to do that first and get a sense of what a car should cost. And a lot of these sites will actually tell you if the car that a dealership is asking about, if their price is fair. It's so easy. And so you want to make sure you check out 5, 6, 8 examples of the vehicle you're looking for. Go in with those prices and knowing those prices. And if you get into that ballpark and if you like the dealer, well, then you're doing fine. But the most important thing about negotiating the price of a car, you don't want to buy it the first day you go shopping. You want to give the dealer a chance to come at you with a second offer. And just don't be in a hurry. Don't put money down on something until you have a contract for a price you want. And don't let them rush you. Mm-hmm. Part of the problem for dealers and for salespeople is that they're not supposed to let you go because people who go don't always come back. You might go to another dealer and get a better deal and never come back. So that's the power you have as a negotiator. You can always leave and you don't have to give them a penny until you get the deal you want.
Hmm. So the bottom line is never walk into a dealership with new car fever. And
right.
we will talk right. more about cars with Tom Appel. Stay with us at WGN. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. I love that track.
Mm-hmm.
That's a crazy tempo they're doing that at. The original was Freddie King's Hideaway, and that was back in the day. That was one of those, if you were a guitar player worth anything, you had to learn how to do that. I never played it that fast. So which version is that, Tom?
That is the legendary Lonnie Brooks.
Oh, yeah.
Off the album Live from Chicago / Bayou Lightning Strikes from 1988. So good.
Oh.
Tom's tunes are tunes that Tom pops into the whatever is playing on the car that he's road testing. In fact, Tom, we've got to talk about something that you're road testing. What's the latest vehicle that you've road tested?
This week, I'm in a very interesting vehicle, very exciting. It's the Genesis GV80, which was rushed for 2025. And we were talking about the Tahoe and what had happened to the dashboard. And that is the principal change for the Genesis as well. It now features a single contiguous dash panel that is includes the instrument panel and the console center console touchscreen. It's a very nice look. It integrates very well into the car. And it does seem to open up more dash area. And a little bit of screen area, too. So it's nice. Additionally, the car picks up some additional styling tweaks outside, some tweaks inside. Otherwise, fundamentally unchanged. So if you liked the vehicle before, you're going to like it now.
And if you're in the market for a luxury SUV, a midsize luxury SUV, Genesis has the reputation for giving you the kind of quality that you would expect from Mercedes and BMW at about $10,000 less. Is that still the case with the 25s?
Yeah, I keep saying that Genesis products are no longer a bargain, but they're still a great value. And the vehicle I'm driving is about $82,000. And I realize that that is a considerable sum of money. But if you were to look at a BMW X5 or Mercedes-Benz GLE, you would pay more money. And Steve, you're probably right, 10, maybe 15 grand more money than mm-hmm. you would for this vehicle. And the interior would not be disappointing in a Bentley. It is absolutely beautiful inside. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Before we move on to a couple other things, I want to share one experience that we had. It was a first for us at a car dealership. The car that we bought about a year and a half ago, as is the case with many vehicles today, came without a spare tire.
Yeah.
It's like this kit that if you have a spare tire, okay, you can kind of inflate the tire with this. But we thought, because we have been known to drive from here to Florida, we'd kind of like to have a spare tire. So we had to order the spare tire, got that, went to the dealership, and
we'll need it for over an hour.
Yeah, they said they would need it for over an hour, but they would set everything up. Okay, fine. We come back to get the car, and the guy says, well, I need to tell you that we couldn't fit the spare tire any place, so we've just kind of dumped it in the back of the car.
82 pounds. just dumped in the back of the car when I looked at it and I said, where's our luggage supposed to go?
And immediately, Johnny and I both went nuclear and said, one of two things is going to happen. Either this is going to be done right, or you're losing a customer and you're taking this back. Cut to the chase. The sales manager comes out and says, oh, that shouldn't have been done that way. He proceeds to go ahead and put it the way it was supposed to have been done, the way that we knew it was supposed to be done.
In the cabinet that's under the floor. Open the lift gate, you take the carpet out, you open up this cabinet, and that's where it sits. Now, instead, it was sitting there in the cargo area, which is crazy.
And we said, what's the deal with this? And he said, well, the guy was a relatively new employee who didn't know. I'm sorry, it's your dealership. You should train them to know how to do this stuff.
Because a spare tire with a jack kit, and you have to buy the tire and the rim separate, so you pay $39 installation to have the tire glued on the rim, it was just a hair shy of $1,000.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And we wanted it, and now that we have it, we're glad we have it. And one of the things we were impressed with is once it was fit, the where it's supposed to be fit, we don't hear any additional noise, no change in the ride of the vehicle or anything. But that was the way it was supposed to be done in the first place. So train your damn employees to do the job right.
And sometimes you have to have a little bit of a hissy fit because I just kept saying, I was actually told, well, you just take it out when you put, what? I'm going to take an 82-pound tire out?
Literally, both of us would have to take that tire out. And in case anybody wonders, the chances of me or Johnny changing that tire are slim and none. But do we want to have it available for whoever is going to pull up to our vehicle and change it? Oh, yeah, we do.
Because if you have a blowout, that kit is not going to make any difference to you. That's when the guy pulls up and he says, do you have a spare? I'll change it for you. Otherwise, I have to tow you.
There are great videos on YouTube of service professionals trying to get a tire that weighs 82 pounds onto a car that's up in the air on the rack.
Yeah.
And what they do now is they take the tire in front of them and lift it a little and drop it and eventually get it to bounce like a basketball. And they're allowing that momentum finally to get high enough where they could push it up and onto the wheel. And it's hilarious because when I was in high school, I worked at a service station, but tires then weighed 20 or 30 pounds on steel wheels. It was so easy then. I'm sure I look strong to people, but it wasn't much of a challenge. Now it's impossible.
Yeah, it's a dead weight.
But one of the other things that we found out, which is the case, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's the case with many SUVs these days, this spare tire that we got is basically a temporary spare tire.
Yeah.
And it had to be very specifically made because on this vehicle, which is an all-wheel drive vehicle, the tires on the front of the car are one size, the tires on the rear of the car are another size, so you have to have a spare tire that will work with either the front or the rear.
Back. Yeah, spares are interesting now, too, because we went through a period when we went from full-size spares to mini spares to cars now who simply don't have spares, and you get the inflator kit. And the inflator kit, probably more effective than people think, but it does probably ruin your tire. Once the tire is filled with that stuff, which is really just a gel that rolls around in the tire and seals, that can't be cleaned out, and it's only temporary. So the problem is you're going to end up having to replace that tire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And probably all four of your tires, because they need to be all the same size to work with all-wheel drive. So the whole tire thing, very expensive these days.
And I'm being triggered. I'm suddenly shaking because I'm to be taken back
but,
to.
But everything you said, it was factoring into why we wanted to get a spare tire to have with the vehicle.
Yep. I want to mention real quick before we wrap it up, in your podcast this week, you talk a bit about wacky colors that Jeep is using for their cars.
Uh-huh.
And that prompted me to go look up some of the colors. They actually have a car colored Earl. Earl is the color.
But now, is it the Duke of?
No, it's gray. It's just gray. It's not silver. It's not fancy. It's gray. And this is my favorite color that Jeep has come up with, bikini. Have you come across bikini, Tom?
I have, and I don't know if you came across Tuscadero.
Tuscadero.
Is it a leather?
Pinky and leather, yeah.
When I was talking, we were speaking to LaSheryl Turner, who is the vice president of advanced color over at Stellantis, and she's a great guest. We've had her on before. She cannot confirm nor deny, so I assume that no licensing deal has been struck, mm-hmm. that Tuscadero is indeed a reference to Pinky Tuscadero. Oh. However, the color is pink. So
that's great. I
think we can assume what we need to there.
Yeah.
Well, before we let you go, the blatant plug light is on. People should follow you at Consumer Guide. And what will they find at Consumer Guide right now?
Oh, I've got a couple of new reviews out. I just drove very briefly, so I did an initial impressions of the Kia EV9. This is Kia's three-row electric midsize crossover, and it's the first three-row crossover that isn't a luxury vehicle sold in the U.S. This is a very interesting vehicle. It's a very important vehicle, I think, and I've got some initial impressions of that. I'm largely impressed. We'll let that be a bit of a
tease.
Yeah.
So people should go to consumerguide.com, check out your best buys, and check out all the other information they can find there. And they should follow you where?
I am Car Guy Tom on Twitter.
We got to get you over to Threads.
Yes.
Yeah.
We really, really, really. I'll be happy to set you up on Threads this week if you would like.
I know I need to do that. The only social media outlet I ever put any effort into was X, so I'm so mad about this.
Oh, I know. You should be. Because you're going to be left there when everybody else leaves.
I'll be the last guy.
That's right. Well, as always, Tom, thanks a million for your time tonight. And we will talk in September, believe it or not.
Because we're not going to be here next week.
Right.
There will be a best of, whatever that is. And then the week after that, Patrick Crispin will be joining us. And then we will talk with you in September.
Yep.
So see you in September.
Sounds good.
Thank you, Tom. Good night.
Thanks, guys.
Those of you who have been with us for more than a minute, remember that years ago, we used to do a Wee Hours of the Morning segment we called Sports Between the Sheets, where we kind of got into some of the breaking sports stories, maybe some silly sports stuff, and just kind of all-inclusive. And because we have the largest audience of PWPs.
Right.
And for those of you who don't know, the rating services have proven we have more people listening to us, people without pants. So, thus, Sports Between the Sheets. Mm-hmm. So, we thought we would have the inaugural re-energized Sports Between the Sheets broadcast tonight. And here joining us now is our Sports Between the Sheets guest commentator, Gabe.
Hey, Gabe.
Well, I guess you can count me in as one of those people without pants, too, because I have shorts on.
And you should you don't want to run through our newsroom right now. It's scary.
Well, if you remember when we were last year, towards the end of last year, when we were heading into the winter months, I was complaining that I had to wear I had to wear pants instead of shorts.
And people were going, what?
So,
well, oddly enough, you and Tom Appel,
yes.
I'm not kidding. It can be the coldest day of the winter. Tom will be wearing shorts.
New Year's Eve, he was here. It was 5 below 0. He walked in wearing shorts. All right.
But how about them Bears?
Yeah.
Good heaven. They're looking like a football team, Gabe.
You know, I was really impressed with how they played on their preseason finale Thursday night against Kansas City. Now, obviously, the starters didn't play for either team, but at the same time, they still had quite the performance against the defending Super Bowl champions. Let's just put that out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then since then, the Bears have made a couple of trades to boost their defensive line. Friday, they added Darrell Taylor. They got him in a trade with Seattle. And then Saturday, they added Chris Williams, a defensive tackle, in a trade with Cleveland. He actually played for Matt Eberflus when he was the defensive coordinator in Indianapolis, and that was at the start of Williams' career. So there's he's familiar with the coaching style there, so that kind of helps, although I thought the Taylor move was a better one because he's more proven pass rusher. But keep in mind that even though the Bears are done with the preseason and they're starting to put their roster together, The preseason as a whole is not done yet. There was a slate of games Saturday, and there's, I think, there's like two or three more later today. And then after that is when teams are going to start cutting players league-wide. So you might see the Bears pick up some guys that were let go. Maybe they feel there's somebody that can add to a certain position, or maybe they feel that there's a player that can fit in better than what they have on the roster now. So these next couple of days are going to be interesting because teams are going to start releasing players. They're going to start putting together their active rosters and their practice squads, taking into account for injuries and things of that nature. So there may be another move or two in the Bears planning moving forward. So we'll just have to see what happens once more teams start releasing players.
In your opinion, what it would be the weakest positions that the Bears are looking at now?
Wow. I wouldn't say this is the weakest position because, I mean, everybody from top to bottom this preseason all, you know, stepped up in some form or fashion.
Mm-hmm.
But I will be curious to see how they evaluate the running back position. I mean, aside from, you know, the top couple of guys, DeAndre Swift, Roschon Johnson, Khalil Herbert, there's still a bunch of other guys to sort through. How many backs do you want to keep on the roster? Also, backups at wide receiver, obviously the three guys starting, Keenan Allen, Rome Odunze, and DJ Moore. And then behind them, you have to sort out the logjam there if you want to be the backups at that position. Because, like I said, everybody and found a way to contribute at one point or another during this preseason. So Bears coaching staff is going to have a lot of tough decisions to make. I wouldn't say that there's a weakness at the position, but I just think that there's some positions where they have so many guys and with so many contributors pitching in during the month of August, that's going to be hard to sort that all out.
And they are undefeated preseason.
Yeah.
And it's only the second time that's happened since 94. They did it in 94. And then, believe it or not, in 2021, they did it. They went 3-0, though, because they only played three games that year. So I'd like to think that's an indicator of what's to come. I mean, after all, and when the Bears went undefeated in the preseason in 94, they made the playoffs that year. So, But again, it's all going to boil down to what they do during the regular season when you have the starters playing the full four quarters, when you got your roster set. So it's exciting, but the Bears are just going to have to put in the work to keep it going.
And just for a second, but I want to segue really quickly from football to baseball. And I say this as a Sox fan, and I have brain fade. The Cubs player who hit the home run and ran the bases in, what, 14 seconds?
Pete Crow Armstrong.
Whoa!
That happened on Friday.
That was so cool.
And it was a good moment for him because the knock on him since he got here was that he wasn't the best hitter. But that was certainly an electric play to watch. And I didn't see it live. I saw the video of it. And he was flying. I mean, I'll go ahead and say maybe he could play wide receiver for the Bears. He was running so fast.
14 seconds is really impressive. And then he scored again on Saturday.
Yeah,
right. So, he had another home run.
That's really good. And the poor White Sox. Moving right along.
Yes, that's a time to break when we move to the White Sox. So more coming up. Stay with us.
I'm gonna sleep. You're gone and you ain't gonna change your mind. You're still keeping me up all night.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. You're still keeping me up all night. Chase Beckham, we voted for him on American Idol, and he's in town.
He is living his best life. California kid, goes on American Idol, and it appeared when he was on American Idol that he'd been talked into it. He was kind of withdrawn. He had a song that he wrote and performed, and it was unpolished, but it was wonderful. And that song and his performance won American Idol for him. And he just kind of slipped away, and everybody thought, oh, he's going to be another one of those Idol or Voice winners that doesn't go anywhere. But he was working on his performance, and then Idol judge Luke Bryan reached out to him and said, come to my house, boy, let's go fishing. And they went fishing, and now he's the opening act for Luke Bryan at Wrigley Field Sunday night.
That is so cool.
It's wonderful. And Chase tells a story that after he spent a couple of days with Luke fishing, hanging around his house, Luke said, here's the code to my house. Anytime you want to fish, just come on by and fish. I don't have to be here. And Luke's show at Wrigley Field will be one of the last music shows for this season.
And Luke is doing something at Wrigley Field that we saw him do for years down on the Panhandle, Panama City Beach. Luke used to play, in fact, Luke really scored some of the largest amount of attention and really solidified his recording career playing at a place called Club La Vila, which was the biggest club, I think,
in the world.
In the world.
Yeah.
Nine stages right on the Gulf of Florida. Sadly, it was really destroyed during the during Hurricane Michael, and most recently has been they just raised it within the past couple of weeks, and they're going to be building the second Tootsie's location on that location. But that when Luke would be down there, every year he was down there, he would put out a limited edition CD that was about a seven-song CD with just songs strictly for that audience at the Panhandle, and he's doing the same thing at Wrigley Field.
For Sunday night, seven-song CD, which I guess the incentive is, put down your phone. You don't need to capture these live appearances, these live performances. You can buy it, take it home with you, and it's going to be so much better than you standing there with your phone up in the air.
Yeah.
And I got to hand it to him because tickets start at $37.95. Now, if you want to be down on the main floor and you want to be in the pit, it's going to be a whole lot more. But to be able to even go to a concert nowadays at $37.95.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. I really like the guy. I do. I'm not crazy about everything that he does, and I think he can be pretty goofy, and he's not the greatest judge on American Idol, but he seems like a really nice guy.
Seems like his heart's in the right
place. Yeah, yeah, and he's just struggled. He's worked really hard. Speaking of Hurricane Michael, his mother lived not very far from us in the Panhandle of Florida, and she had all of his gold records, and the hurricane came in and took her house out to sea with all of his gold records, and I envision some, you know, 100 years from now, somebody's going to dig those up in the ocean.
Davy Jones' locker with Luke Bryan's gold records.
This is gold. This is real gold. So that is one of many things that happening over the next few days in Chicago.
We're getting close to the end of the show.
I know.
We came in here with I'm not kidding. We came in here with a list of things we didn't get to. I'm going to run through some of the list because there are some things we wanted to mention. One, there is a new COVID vaccine.
Yes.
Pay attention. I understand there are some of you that don't want to get vaccinated. That's your choice, but please don't come around me if you don't want to get vaccinated. The vaccines are out there, and they will be available within
Walgreens says September 6th. CVS says they might have it a day or two earlier. Call your store. Find out if you need to make an appointment. If you're over a certain age, like over the age of 65, if you have a compromised immune system, you really, really should step up and say, I'm going to have it. Some people are saying, I'm going to wait till October. I'm going to get it the same time I get my flu shot. Because you can get both of them at the same time.
You know, we haven't talked about this, but I wonder, we meant to talk about the Democratic National Convention, because forget your politics. It was great TV.
It was.
It really was some great TV. But sadly, and I had the same thought with the Republican National Convention, sadly, we talk about COVID and vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them were just spreaders.
Yeah.
The amount of people unmasked, hugging, and I get all the emotion. I understand all that, but boy, I hope it doesn't happen to a lot of people. Sadly, I think too many people are going to wind up getting COVID.
It's quite possible that everybody listening to us knows someone who has had it this summer.
Yeah.
We know now seven people in the past month.
Yep.
And it was not pretty. I mean, it really knocked them on their butt. And when they tested, they realized, they had to stay home. But my friend said, I had to stay home because I was sick.
Yeah.
I was really sick.
Yeah. Also, we should mention again, Next week, we are not going to be here. We're going to be out in Pasadena hanging out with our grandson, Joseph. And next week, there is going to be a, if they can find one, best of replay. And we'll be back here, Julian, I believe, for a full show in 2 weeks, I believe, or is it? Because there are some other sporting things going on.
Oh, I think
on.
We're good. We're good till the end of September.
I'll double check, but that sounds about right.
Yeah, I think it's the 23rd of September is when we first experience the hockey pregame season. Okay. And don't freak out, folks. We're just starting like a half hour later for hockey.
Yeah. Let's see, what else?
Oh, back to school Monday. Kids go back to school. I had this whole long list of things I wanted to talk about, like why are Crocs on the hate list? You can't wear Crocs to school. And because, in fact, they've popped up on so many of the dress code lists all across the country. And as I said earlier, Crocs and gangs, doesn't it make you think time... You know, they go hand in hand, but there's a reason for it. So we'll have to pick up on that in future programs.
I
thought that was my stomach growling, but that's the Zamboni.
The blue light is flashing, and we hear the Zamboni in the background.
And a listener at 847 said, I think the Zamboni is idling and ready to go.
And that's absolutely true. So if you would like to be our last caller as... As Big Plug Bob on the Zamboni cleans up the studios, you can give us a call, 312-981-7200. That number again is 312-981-7200 if you would like to be our last caller and win some goodies. As long as you have not won anything from this here radio station within the past 2 months.
Right. And we'd like to say...
Or 60 days.
You don't have to have anything pithy... That's with a T-H, pithy, pithy to talk about. Just, you know, just give us a holler. Say, hey, I'm here. I've been listening. This is what I got planned for my Sunday. Go Bears. Whatever you want to talk about. Maybe you got a little sports story you want to tell us, a back-to-school story. Maybe the kids are going back to school.
Maybe you were at the Colbert Show.
Yeah. Doggone it, I did not hear the day that... Lisa talked about it, and apparently John got to go to one of the Colbert tapings, broadcast. And some folks had texted earlier tonight and said, we were wondering what was going on when they went to commercial break. And apparently there was music that was being played. Mm-hmm. And anyway, a little behind the scenes stuff.
I was just so impressed with the energy level. I'm wondering what is going to happen when Colbert goes back to New York, because he was flat out, Chicago is his favorite city. He loves the Auditorium Theater, and I wonder how that's going to play with the New York audience when he gets back to New York.
Right, and he put on a few pounds because he just ate his way through Chicago.
Yeah.
He said, either I'm retaining fluid or I've eaten too much. He really, the 4 nights that he was in Chicago was
great television.
Valentine to this city. I mean, the city looked beautiful. Yes, the weather was great, but the Auditorium Theater was just drop dead. I had no idea that there was a fourth balcony
The high balcony above the high balcony.
Up in the, literally in the rafters. It was just incredible.
And it was full.
It was full. Yes.
Okay, we got to stop talking so we can come back and talk. So we'll stop talking now.
It's that time again. We gotta say goodnight. You know it's getting late. Tomorrow is another day, my friend.
All right, people. It's time to go home.
Yep.
Losing time. We're ready to head on out. So let's go.
You don't have to go home.
Yeah, you really kind of do.
But you can't stay here.
Nope. And again, that's Red Peters, the closing. We got to get him on.
I know, before the end of the year.
Yeah.
As I say, every Monday the guy goes, why do I have a bump in views and listens?
And you can go to YouTube and you can check out the closing song, Red Peter. But speaking of YouTube, check out our YouTube page. Mm-hmm. Go to youtube.com/Steve and Johnny Show. You will find the videos of the Empty Pockets, mm-hmm. of Tommy Emmanuel.
Oh, Steve Dawson.
Steve Dawson, some wonderful stuff.
Yeah.
With Steve Dawson. Well, wonderful stuff with all of them.
All of them. And great, great videography.
Videography? Videography, yeah.
See, it's getting late. Not only have I run out of words, but my mind just decided to shut down.
But we're running out of all the good words.
But our videography was done by our producer, Julian. Awesome work.
So thank you, Julian.
Yes.
Thank you.
And again, a reminder, we will not be saying new words next week. You will hear old words from us next week.
But when we return, we will regale you with tales of our time in California.
But do we have to regale?
Yes, we do. Hanging out with 8-year-old.
Can you gale before you regale?
Joseph. And we might spend some time with his mom and dad, but actually we're just going to see Joseph.
Going out to see Joseph and his posse.
That's right, yes. All right, we got a bunch of calls here. I think it's my turn to choose. I'm going to randomly pick a number. My lucky number is 5.
Okay, and that would be Nancy. Hi, Nancy. Where are you calling from?
Hey, Nancy.
Hi.
Hi.
I never expected to get
home. Yeah. We scared you to death, right?
What are you doing up at this? What are you doing up at this hour?
Oh well, I'm used to staying up late. I don't have anything to do. I've been retired since 1994, I think it's been. I'm 86 years old.
Oh my gosh,
you're a kid.
You sound great. You sound like you sound literally. I'm not kidding. You sound 20 years younger.
What did you do before you retired?
Thank you.
What did you do before?
I was a postal employee, and then I became a postmaster, and I went to a higher level office. And when I retired from there, I went to school for respiratory care, and in my 50s, I started another new career. This is while raising 4 sons, pretty much by myself.
Wow!
I bet you could write a book.
Oh, I know. I could write a couple of books.
I mean, 4 boys right there. And if you add the post office to it, oh, my gosh. As my grandmother used to say, your crown when you get to heaven is going to be so heavy.
Yeah.
It's going to be so heavy. So you don't have anything you have to do. So what is on your agenda during this hot spell that we're slipping into on Sunday?
I'm staying inside, and I'm going to be reading books or watching television or talking to my friends over the phone.
Good. I hear you.
Okay, I have to ask, what is on your reading list? Because we keep meaning to do, to share with you guys. We have about 6 books that we recently ordered, and they're hardback books, and we can't wait to get into them. But so what is on your reading list? What are you looking forward to reading?
Well, I don't know yet, but I really enjoyed reading American Dirt.
Oh, I have that. That's one of the books that I have, American Dirt. Yeah.
It is so good. You will really enjoy it.
Well, I'm going to take that to California with me because we have a 4-hour plane ride. I will, out of the 6 that we have, I will take that one with me. Yes.
Oh.
Did you watch much television last week during convention time to see Chicago looking so beautiful?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I did. Watched it a lot, quite a bit of it. It was really, really a sensational program, whether you're Democrat or Republican.
Yeah, it was just good TV.
It was great television.
Yeah.
It certainly was. It certainly was.
Have you ever been to the Auditorium Theater? Because I know I've been there, but it never looked the way it did when Stephen Colbert would go on stage for 4 nights last week.
I love him.
Oh, my gosh.
No, No, I haven't ever been there.
I've been to the Auditorium Theater for several concerts. One of the first I ever saw, and this was years ago, Harry Belafonte.
Oh.
And that was when he was introducing Miriam Makeba, who had a hit with the Pata Pata song. Years later, I saw the Beach Boys and the Rascals at the Auditorium Theater.
Oh.
And I also saw... I just happened to think of this. I saw Joe Cocker at the Auditorium Theater, and that was one of the days when Joe was not feeling really well, and he kept wandering back to the stage and barfing and then coming back up to the mic and singing.
Oh, weird.
Yes.
Oh, that's terrible.
That is terrible. And you know what we're going to be talking about literally in 15 minutes when we get in the car? What are we having for dinner when we get home?
So what do you like to have for a midnight snack or a 2 o'clock in the morning snack, Nancy?
Oh, golly. If I've got any leftovers in the refrigerator, I start nibbling on them.
Yeah.
Or just a couple of cookies.
Well, I fried chicken the other night, and I said to Steve, we still have some fried chicken left over. Nothing like cold fried chicken in the middle of the night.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we might do that. I am so hungry now. It happens at 1 o'clock every week. Gosh.
You got to bring a lunch.
It feels like we have 5 hours, but it seems like we sit down, and I'm not kidding you. Steve was rattling off some of the things we didn't get to tonight. We have this long list of things, and during a break, I don't have a second to break out any food. So I just throw a bag of crackers in my bag just in case one of us gets a little queasy. Here, eat a cracker.
Yeah. I'm feeling faint.
But a cracker with a bottle of water is just sad. So we start fantasizing about this fabulous meal that we're going to have when we get home. Well, speaking of fabulous...
You need cookies.
Well, I know. Or chocolate or something like that. It has been so nice to meet you. You are going to receive your very own WGN official T-shirt, and you're getting a desktop weather station from American Weathermakers Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing. They won't be comfortable until you are. AmericanWeathermakers.com, and that has become quite the collectible. So...
Nancy, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Hold on for a second, and Julian will get some information from you off the air. Quick reminder, next week you will hear old words from us, assuming they can find any kind of a best-of replay, because we're going to be out in California hanging out with our grandson, Joseph. And 2 weeks from now, we will be back saying new words to you. Our thanks to you for hanging out with us.
Yeah.
Our thanks to Julian and to Bob and Ron
and Gabe. And big plug, Bob.
Yes.
He's parked the Zamboni, so he's going to take over next. And, again, thank you guys for tuning in. Yeah.